Okay, Dom, so here we are now, beginning part three, and I guess before we get into this, just if you missed either of the first two parts, certainly do go back and listen to those. We're going to be picking up now with episode seven, and that is God's Judgment. And the place I want to start is with Hong Chul, and he is someone that obviously really stands out when watching this season. He's someone, we talked about it a little bit last time, that we were both surprised to not see on the All-Star cast. Of course, he has that, you know, the whole DUI situation. He's basically out of the TV game. So there's that going on to it. But we really haven't gotten to talk that much about Hong Chul, even though he is such a big presence on this season, because we really have been focusing more on like how the games themselves transpire, which he's not often a big part of. But one thing we can give him a lot of credit for is his wardrobe, and particularly his headgear. And today he really outdoes himself with his, you know, he's had some great stuff with his like headband. He's had scarves, he's had plenty, and today he comes in with like an 1840s prospector, like gold rush hat, like, which is really, really strong. But let's get in a little bit just on Hong Chul in general while we're thinking of it.
Yeah, my favorite was when he was cradling Doohee back in episode 3, and he was wearing like this like polychromatic jumper with all these stripes on it, and then this massive pink headband. Just it looks so bizarre, but it's like the quintessential Hong Chul look. I think he needs his own clothing line.
Yeah, well, what do you think about Hong Chul's just kind of general role in this season? Because we really haven't talked, as I've said, about him that much. He doesn't play a major role in really most of the games. Like, obviously, him forming that alliance before the practice round even starts plays a huge role in episode 1, but since then he's been pretty quiet other than stealing Jung Hyun's bill in episode 5.
Yeah, and there's episode 2 where he decides to just make things more complicated for everybody, and it ends up rebounding on him, but after that point he doesn't really get involved in too much. But I think it's the fact that he is so loud and so overexcited, he stands out more vividly than a lot of the other cast members, and so you think of him as having a larger role than maybe he actually does.
Right. I say Hong Chul has been quiet for these episodes. He's certainly not for these episodes. Yes, no. He's certainly not been quiet. He's just not been involved in the games. Because it's you know, we're often talking about Jinho's trying to lead one team and Yeowon's off doing his thing, and then Sangmin's doing God knows what, Junghyun's kind of clowning around, and Hong Chul doesn't even come up, even though he is really adding a ton to each of these episodes. So I did want to at least give him a bit of his due there. And it also is, I think there is, honestly, not only is he just like louder and does really have a much more charismatic personality and like TV-friendly personality, he's also much taller than everyone else, which I think makes him stand out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's got to be at least 6 feet tall, which is not standard on The Genius. Anyway, so we get into this episode a little bit, and we find out that Yeowon's girlfriend, who we talked a little bit about before, just from seeing her on that that other show that Bum Diddley, I'm just, what's it called? Subtitles. Apparently she's been calling all of the players between the weeks, asking them to help Yeowon, except she did not call Jung Hyun.
Yeah, and having seen Gayeon Nuna on this other show with Hong Chul, it makes so much sense that she would be the one like playing the game for Yeowon by proxy almost, and that he is kind of sitting sheepishly in the background while she rants over the phone to people about how they need to work with him or she's going to punish them. Like, it just seems so perfect. And it's a tragedy, actually, that we don't get to see her play the game, but I guess that would be kind of an awkward situation.
Yeah, she is easily the most aggressive female genius player who has never even played the genius. Yeah. All right, so let's get into this game. It is God's Judgment. And this is the dice rolling game where you get some dice. Special dice are available for 5 garnets. And if you win for whatever reason, you get that 5 garnet deposit back. And eventually at a certain point, you know, you'll be able to buy your dice, and we'll find out you can deconstruct your dice and reconstruct them. And eventually everyone's going to get to roll their dice and bet on what they think their sums are going to be. And whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Dice can be given up and also traded, even though everyone's dice are going to lock once the first person starts rolling. It's not like you have a disadvantage in being the first one to go. And Dom, as is always the case, as I alluded to, something is of course going to be up with the props in this game.
Yeah, and it might be easy to say this given that we know what the actual outcome is, but it's not going to be some kind of thing where your odd shift from just a game of pure chance to a game of some chance and some skill, there is going to be a way to fundamentally break the game. And so if you can find that, then you have solved it. The issue I have, and the reason I don't think this is actually a good game to host, is if only one person solves it, as indeed happens with Sangmin, then that's great. You know, you can build up to this big reveal at the end. But if, let's say, Sangmin and Jinho and a third person all found out what the key trick was, then firstly, anything that the others do is irrelevant, and it just feels like a sideshow. And then also, you get this rather like unsatisfying final outcome where everyone is in on the joke, and yet it just doesn't really amount to anything.
Yeah, that is a good point. And we're certainly far beyond the point in the genius history. Like, we saw, I remember talking during season one, when they were playing Kong's Dilemma, they had those little lockers for their beans, and Jinho tried to open other people's lockers with his key. Like, the secret is out, that there are going to be tricks to these props in the game. So I think you are right, that this game certainly runs the risk, although it would probably be really expensive for enough people to get the right dice to make all of the one-numbered die and have several people doing that, let alone just have several people notice it in the first place. But you are right that there's certainly a theoretical risk of multiple people figuring this out. And they did probably get really lucky in only Sangmin figuring it out. Because especially if you consider when you get two markers, it's not like you need both of your dice to be one number each. Having one dice that's just one number and one dice that's two numbers is just as good because you get two markers. So like if you have one that's all sixes and one that's all fives and sixes, that's just as good as having Sangmin's dice.
So the contestants start to enter the set, and we have this discussion now of making Sangmin burn the Token of Immortality. And as we know, this is never going to come to pass because Sangmin is going to win everything from here on out. But it's worth noting that even the people who Sangmin has been working closely alongside for the past few episodes are conscious of the need to bring him down to their level.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is. It's hard to miss how powerful that is when it's not only a free pass. Not only do you not have to play the deathmatch, you also get to pick who goes in there and essentially decide between which of two people is going to be eliminated that week. It is an overwhelming amount of power, particularly in the hands of someone as like generally capable as Sangmin is with these games. Like, he is liable, like we see go on to happen, to go on a long winning streak where there's never anything you can do about it. So they are absolutely right, I would say, in wanting to dump this thing as early as possible. Like, I can't believe there wasn't a group agreement that the next time it's even possible, we all need to pick Sangmin. Whoever ends up in the deathmatch needs to pick Sangmin and make him burn that thing.
Yeah, and even beyond the token and his general skill in the game and his experience as a returning player, he has over a third of the Garnets in play at this point. So if that becomes anything that he can leverage in any of these games, then he's going to have an overwhelming advantage.
Right. I mean, we'll get there when we talk about the next game after this one, but he can essentially buy a win after this, after God's Judgment, when he gets the game that we get to in Episode 8.
Sure. So Junghyun now tries to quote Nelson Mandela and forgets the quote. So solid work on his part. And the flash forward, which comes fairly early in the episode, is Hong Chul just Hong Chuling all over the place. So no real indication there of what's going to go down. So after the credit sequence, they get down to trying to figure out the game. And Jinho, you know, he has been part of breaking one of these games before with the open pass game. And he knows that in general, there has to be some secret here. Jinho is trying to make something happen with G1 and Hongchul, which is interesting given that G1 and Hongchul have been working fairly closely with Sangmin, and Jinho has been usually the one leading the other factions. So for them to just like blend together is maybe not what you would expect here.
No, but I mean, it's just at this point, to me, I would chalk that up as just a classic genius dynamic where, for whatever reason, they had decided this week was going to be a good time for them to all want to work together. It happens. We see it all the time.
Right, and meanwhile, Yeo-wan is still smarting over his betrayal last week over the Token of Immortality, so Jinho doesn't seem to want him either, and so he ends up working with Yu-yong, who doesn't seem overly enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just another game where, like, I guess there are ideas of trading other pieces with people, like, down the line when Sangmin figures out to break the dice in half, way before everyone else, he has a leg up on figuring out the good combinations and so forth, but this isn't really a game other than helping people get enough garnets to buy more dice that there is a lot of like collaboration involved with. You're only rolling your own dice. You don't win as a team. And I also like, by the way, because I think they, obviously the genius producers are aware that the players know tricks are going to be involved in these games with props far more often than not. And they threw in, and maybe this was just a happy coincidence, where in order to make the dice really stick together convincingly, they needed magnets. But the dice are also magnetic when they are whole, which was a great kind of red herring. Like, people thought when they found that was the trick, and they tried to figure out how to break that.
Yeah, and that's crucial, I think, as a production decision. Like, when you know that all of the contestants will be looking for some key to breaking the game, I think if you can insert things like that that seem like they would be the right answer, even if they aren't what they should be looking for, then that's a way to keep it fair and interesting.
Right, because it's not like they're looking for anything, and magnets are a trick. Magnets are something that are going to take their focus for a little while. Like, we see Yo-Wan go and try to practice just, like, nudging the magnets, asking the dealer if that counts as a roll.
Yeah, we see Yo-Wan and Jin-Ho trying to, like, roll them in a certain way or see if they can exploit the magnetism. Meanwhile, Yu-Yong realizes that there are lines on the dice, so why would those be there? And maybe there's some way you can, like, turn them to make things happen. So everyone is looking for their own solution. And Sangmin, echoing what Jin-Ho said, says, quote, "I think this isn't luck. I think there's definitely an answer." And as we see later, he's the first one to find what that answer is and really exploit it.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I'm hoping that in this environment, I would have thought to try to crack open the dice, because the thing that really stood out to me, as someone who plays a lot of backgammon and other games with dice, is I have never seen dice in my life with asymmetrical pips, where you can't fold it in half and make people know what symmetry is, where they're so weirdly designed that there's got to be something to that. I feel like that would at least be my impulse, and that obviously I didn't know that they were going to be able to crack in half, but it did make everything ironically almost clicked for me when they unclicked the dice and they could make them split them in half, and the pips actually had a reason to be that way.
Yeah, so the first reveal we have around this is Jin-Ho discovering that the dice are separable, and we see him going from room to room trying to avoid being discovered and having other people see what he's doing. Later on, we see G1 and Hongchul find it almost by accident, where they're holding it and just, you know, casually moving it with their hands, and it breaks apart. And at that point, like you said, it clicks for them, and they go off and try and do it. And soon everyone knows, except for Junhyun, who is just, again, walking the corridors, completely unaware of everything that's going on around him.
Yeah, I loved when, I think it was when Hongchul figured it out, Sangmin was right there, and they were just, like, in the main hall with other people around, and Sangmin immediately, like, holds up his legal pad to, like, obscure the view of what Hongchul is doing and, like, wraps him up and takes him into another room, which I thought to prevent other people from seeing what was happening. Yeah, I thought that was really good. A really heads-up play to try to keep the information to you and the person who you know has it.
Yeah, so we get on to the actual game now, and Junhyun somehow banks a score of 9 out of 10, which, if he turned out to be the person with the highest score after being the only one to not figure out anything related to how the game actually works, that would be so incredible to me. But sadly, it was not to be. Although we do get to see maybe his only ever expression of emotion here, where, you know, he's clearly relieved that after doing nothing to advance himself in the game, fate has given him a helping hand.
Yeah, this was the one scene that his kids could watch and be proud of.
Yeah, because, you know, he got entirely lucky and did nothing through his own skill. But right. In any case,
well, people look at he got 9 out of 10. But one way to look at that is that he got 9 out of 10 and was just one away. Like, if he had just gotten, and he probably was a favorite to roll one of his two numbers on any given roll. So if that just other one had gone his way, he would have gotten a perfect score. Of course, the way to actually look at it is he got really lucky to even get to 9. And to think of it as, oh, he only missed one is completely ludicrous. But it still is amazing. And like I brought up in one of our earlier parts, I felt so bad when people weren't even watching him do his rolls until he got up to like 6 out of 7.
Yeah, and that's why, to go on my soapbox for a moment, whenever people say stuff like, oh, Ozzy was one challenge away from winning Survivor twice, it's like, no, he was 5 or 6 challenges away from winning Survivor, and it just so happened that he hit the outcome where he got the first 4 or 5 and not the last one. But that doesn't mean he was one away. It means, you know, that was just the outcome that he happened to get. But yeah, regardless, I did feel bad for him that no one was watching, except for Yu-Yong, who does... Yeah, who does at one point come up to the table and, like, hold his hand, which I thought was kind of nice.
Is Hubei. Did anyone else do anything impressive during this, other than Hongshul being hysterical while rolling his dice?
Well, Sangmin's acting job, knowing that he was going to get a perfect score and that no one else could even come close to it, and yet he still acting like he's just one more participant who was actively invested in what was going on here.
Yeah, our good buddy Koss pointed that out, as this episode is really only as good as it is because Sangmin plays along the whole time. Like, he knows it's one as soon as he sees that no one else has perfect dice. Or, you know, barring someone getting miraculously, not even miraculously, like, dice aren't that improbable, just in general. But really strong stuff here from Sangmin. Of course, he had one die with all fives and the other of all sixes. G1, by the way, a dice with a zero on it, a die with a zero on it. I have, in all my years, never seen a die with a zero on it.
Yeah, you get dice that are made for gaming, which have, like, random symbols or whatever. But, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, it was because, like, one of his sides was a zero, and another one of his sides was an eight. Like, his range of scores was hysterical. And I think it was the case that, like, he would have been better off just never even breaking up his dice by the time he got to his end result.
Maybe he just wants to gamble. I mean, who can blame him?
Yeah, that would have been something if G1 had won this game, or not won, but tied for the win here. So I guess, actually, one very astute observation here from Hongshul is that the real winner today is the Bandit Young, who took all of their garnets, because they were each shelling out five garnets apiece for each of these special dice sets, and the only person who got anything back is Sangmin.
Yeah, and we see that in the final garnet distribution at the end of the game, where Sangmin has 35 garnets, Yuyong has 8, and the other contestants have 2 garnets between them. So Sangmin is just completely out of control here, and no one can even hold a candle to him.
Right, Yuyong has 8, G1 and Jung Yun have 1. After this game, this is Jinho, Hongshul, and Yowon all at 0. Sangmin with 35 out of 45 garnets, with 6 people left.
It so great to me that Yuan for the majority of the season has 0 garnets, and Sangmin at various points has like 20, 35, you know, if you want to talk about like inequality of wealth, I mean, that's what you see right there.
Yeah, and it really is just amazing. I remember talking about this before we even talked about the first game of episode 1, season 1, is the way the garnets work is you could theoretically never win a main match and still end up winning all of the garnets in the prize pool, because all you have to do is just beat whoever won all of them in the finals. And we almost see that coming into play here. I guess Yowon actually goes into the finals with more garnets because he gets them after the final 3 death match, but he almost runs the table here, having 0 garnets or 1 garnet the entire course of the game and almost coming away with like 62 grand.
Yeah, there's this scene a few episodes before where Yuyong and Junghyun come in at the same time, and they treat Yuyong as if she's like this princess or this chaebol because she has, I think it's like 10 or 12 garnets or something, whereas the next highest person has 8. And that just seems so silly in retrospect when you consider that a few episodes later, Sangmin is going to have like 80% of the garnets in play. It's, you know, it's completely overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, it is, what, 7/9 out of the garnets, so yeah, getting there. And it is, like, we'll talk about episode 8 where it's the minus auction where Sangmin can pass on numbers by using garnets, and that will redistribute them a bit, but I still think there is something to be said as far as maybe this wasn't the best game design when it's pretty much always going to result in this much of a garnet disparity.
Yeah, and if you want to make one criticism of season 2, I think that it does have a few games like this where they just go outside the parameters of what the genius tends to be, like the Blackout game first, and then you have God's Judgment here. But overall, I think the selection of games this season is pretty on point.
All right, so it turns out having a zero on your die is not the call. G1 ends up getting last place here, and he ends up picking Jinho for the death match on the grounds, at least that what he says is he'd be the least embarrassed by losing to Jinho out of everyone that he could choose from. And so these two are going to be playing Indian Hold'em.
Yeah, and I kind of like that, actually. Like, you can say maybe the smartest choice would be to figure out who you think the weakest opponent would be, but I like that G1 is swinging for the fences here.
Well, it sucks to be Jinho, especially when you're playing Indian Hold'em, like getting picked on the grounds that you're the biggest favorite. It's like, come on, dude, don't even pick me then.
Yeah, and if he then goes on to lose, it's even more embarrassing.
That's what I mean. Like, he's got to now be susceptible to a potentially very high variance game, which Indian Hold'em certainly is, as we will get into right now, where, first of all, the way Indian Hold'em works is you have to buy your chips to play with garnets, and considering at the end of God's Judgment, they have a combined 1 garnet, that's going to be an issue for at least one of them, and it is kind of actually interesting that they have to borrow garnets to even play a death match here. Yeah, and like later on, way down the line, when it's going to be like an endgame death match, Sangmin just gives G1 a bunch of garnets to even just make it competitive. Like, that's how ridiculous the Garnet disparity gets.
I wonder what happens if Sangmin and Yuyong refuse to lend them any Garnets. Like, does Jinho just not even get to take part, or do they give him would they give him a certain like baseline number of chips, or how would that work, do you think?
I'm guessing, considering they said the rules were you get five chips for every Garnet you present. If no one's willing to give Jinho any Garnets, he doesn't get any chips.
I can't imagine they would let that stand, though, because you can't just not have a deathmatch.
I think they probably just both have to borrow, or if they both have zero, maybe they give him a base of, like, 15 chips or whatever. But when one person shows up with a Garnet and is able to buy chips and the other one isn't, I don't feel like if you're production, you can do anything about that.
See, I think it would be more unfair to let that stand than it would be to substitute those rules for a different set of rules that would let both people take part. Because it's not like you're rigging it for one person to stay in. All you're doing is ensure that they get a chance to fight to stay in.
I think they, in a sense, got unlucky that the people who ended up going to the deathmatch had no Garnets. On the other hand, I think they brought that on themselves by the way the Garnet purchasing for dice was designed in this game. But I think, I get why they would do the trade Garnets for chips, because they don't want it to be, like, if you have more Garnets, you, I guess, theoretically should get rewarded for that, right? Like, you should get more chips to start. I think if they had this one to rewrite the rules on, they would just give them both, when they know it's going to be so few Garnets coming into the death match, they would just say, okay, you get 20 chips each. All right, so let's get into how this actually goes down. It is not very interesting because, as happens, this is something we flagged up in our Season 1 podcast as well. That should be the drinking game, by the way, for these future podcasts, is whenever we reference our Season 1 podcast, you drink. But anyway, in Indian Hold'em, chopped pots, as in when it's a tie, they do not just split the pot. It actually stays in for the next hand. So if you are presented with a scenario where both people end up with the worst possible card, it will get all in, and then it'll just come down to who draws the highest card the next hand. That's what we see end up playing out here. They get in what we call in poker the nut low against the nut low. It stays in, and now we're just flipping a coin to see who ends up leaving the game. Yeah, and obviously this is a massive, massive sweat. Jinho, to this point, you know, he's the winner of Season 1. He and Sangmin are clearly the stars of the franchise, and this would be an horrific way to end up losing him, you know, on this second shot. He's been doing so well. Sadly, that is how this goes down. After yet another tie, which was actually a really cool reveal. I thought that was fun. Unfortunately, this is the end of our defending champion, Jinho. What are your thoughts here, Dom, particularly seeing him go out in this fashion?
Even though I said I think Jinho is a bit overrated by most people, it's still really tough to lose him, especially in these circumstances. I don't have a problem with G1 at all. I think even though he's not a great player, he's a good character, but I think most people were rooting for Jinho to stay in this one here.
Yeah, I certainly was. I would imagine most people were. I think it really is heartbreaking for it to come down to, like we've talked about, just because of a dumb rule where they don't chop chops. That ends up costing us one of the most legendary players in the franchise, potentially. Like, maybe G1 goes on and wins this. But it's certainly a sour way to lose Jinho, at least for me. I think Jinho absolutely brought it in virtually every episode he was in. I think he's so much fun to watch. I am really, really excited to have him back in Season 4. So what's your thought about Jinho entering Season 4 now, just to get briefly into that?
Yeah, certainly very excited to see him play again. I don't know how much he's going to change things based on what he did in the first two seasons, because obviously most people who win a season of whatever game it is are not going to be inclined to change the way they play. And I think Jinho, having the kind of gamer's mindset that he does, is going to attribute most of what happened to him in Season 2 to variance. And it's not going to be like some fundamental flaw in his game that he needs to repair.
Yeah, I think Jinho actually has an okay chance here to win Season 4, or like at least put in another deep run, because he is, as much as we talk about him being probably the most overrated player just in public perception, he is still really good. And he is, like, I think if I were drafting, like, I'm a team captain and we're about to play a team game, I think Jinho would be my number one overall pick out of, like, anyone we've ever seen. Or maybe, yeah. Jinho would certainly be very high on the list because he is a really strong player, particularly in team games. He has, I think, fantastic meta because he always does seem to, whenever it is a team environment at least, really be going all out, trying to help everyone and not just himself, unlike certainly at least Sangmin. So I think he actually has some good chances here in Season 4, and I'm really excited to see him back. And certainly a lot more Jinho talk coming this summer. Sad to see him go here in Season 2, but what can you do? And it must be particularly brutal, kind of as this is happening, as these episodes are real time to be G1 here, where we have episode 6 with the whole Doohy controversy, and G1's really like the one person held responsible for that, I think, both for stealing the ID and like single-handedly eliminating him in the deathmatch. And now to take out the defending champion that everyone loves over the course of 2 weeks must have been a pretty rough patch here for G1.
Although G1, as far as I understand, obviously he maybe was not necessarily a big figure, but a public figure back in the 90s. But, you know, as of 2013, I don't know how high profile he really was.
Yeah, okay. Let's get into episode 8, I suppose. And we are going to be playing the Minus Auction. And this is the one where there are all those negative numbers that get drawn one at a time by the dealer. Everyone gets a certain number of chips to start, then they can pass on the cube if they don't want to take it, or you can also pass with a garnet. And we're going to see this come into play big time for Sangmin, that pass with a garnet rule, because he has so many more. He has 35 out of 45 garnets at this point. And as I referenced earlier, he can essentially just keep passing on the cubes that he doesn't want, redistribute some garnets. He's still going to have the most, and he's going to get to keep the token of immortality going into the final five. So that's really the way this game's going to play out. Virtually every time. I guess just to get more quickly into the rules as a refresher, the goal is to get the lowest score, and since these are to get the highest score, since these are all minus numbers, as in the score closest to zero, kind of like reverse golf almost, where and consecutive cubes only count as the best number. So if you have the minus 22 and the minus 23, that only counts as a minus 22 for your score. And one cube is going to get randomly removed before the game starts. So it's not like they're all in play and you can predict. So that adds a huge twist into it, because certainly down the line in some timeline, someone could just take all the cubes remaining if they know exactly what's left, and they'll know exactly what their score is going to be. The number from furthest from zero is going to be your loser. And each chip that you get, by the way, each of the chips that you can use to pass is worth plus one at the end. Towards your number. So that's going to come in. Actually, that's going to be weird because we end up with a tie here in a game that is very hard to tie because of that chip rule. So like I touched on, Sangmin here, of course, has so many of these garnets in play, and he can pass on bad cubes that he doesn't want with these garnets. He's still going to have a huge garnet lead. I assume that's going to be your game plan here if you're Sangmin, because it's a lot different being Sangmin than anyone else.
And if I'm somebody else in this game and I don't seem to have a realistic chance of coming first, then as long as it doesn't propel me down into last, I'm going to do what I can to bleed garnets away from Sangmin here, just to try and level the playing field a bit.
That is a good point, because I think a lot of people probably should have recognized pretty quickly after hearing the rules that Sangmin's going to basically be able to buy a token of life this round and thus be able to keep that token of immortality for the next round. So this is another one of those games. And we'll see Yoan really embrace this philosophy where, as we approach the end game of Season 2, it really does become about just not being last, because Sangmin is probably going to win the main match. And that's fine, because he has the Token of Immortality and thus won't pick me.
Yeah, and that creates like this self-perpetuating cycle where if you know or at least expect that Sangmin is going to win, you want to do what you can to be on Sangmin's good side so that either he can help you in the deathmatch or maybe give the token to you if the situation calls for it. So that expectation that Sangmin is going to do well just adds another layer to the reasons why Sangmin is going to do well in the first place.
Yeah, and this is another game. A good friend of the show, Ian Terry, has researched a ton of these genius games and been testing them on his high school students. And this is one that I know he really likes to play with them, because there are some interesting strategies where when really bad numbers come up, even if you know you're eventually going to take it, you also know other people aren't going to take it. So you can pass it and let it keep going around and like build up some chips and garnets in there. But of course, you know, as we see play out later, sometimes people can get too greedy and someone else will take it.
Or sometimes someone will just take a cube for no apparent reason. And we see this multiple times where it doesn't seem to make any sense for someone to take it, and yet they just do, and it's and they never even fully explain why.
Well, that would be what we call the Jung-Hyun decision-making process. Yeah. Anyway, so I also really, really love that during this game, they can openly negotiate and talk between every person's decision. Like, after someone passes, and say it's Hongchul's turn to either take the cube or pass, then there's a new round of discussion before he even has to make this decision. Like, Sangmin can try to talk him into taking it or not taking it. There's a lot of room for play here. So good timing, negotiation skills, and obviously luck is going to be a big factor. Like, the order that the numbers get drawn is massive in the way that this game is going to play out any time. But this is what makes it such a good game and such a repeatable game, is the numbers aren't going to, it's not like you're going to get the same stretch of numbers coming up in the same order in virtually any iteration of this game, any two iterations of this game.
Yeah, and this is another one of those games which has a real life analog. In this case, it's called No Thanks. And so you can just like buy a box version of it and play it with your friends. And I've tried it a few times, and it always kind of feels like you know what you're doing, and then someone just like buys the wrong cube at the wrong time, and then suddenly you find yourself in last place without any idea of what happened.
Yeah, that's, you got Jeremy Collins'd.
Pretty much, yeah.
yeah. So Johan's plan here is, he's, I think, again, this is kind of crafted around knowing Sangman's going to win this game, is he's going to take all the high numbers but let them go around for a while so he can kind of get rich in the process. Which I think is not a bad idea. Just yet another example of Johan, I think, really thinking bigger picture here, which really impresses me. And Sangman, I think it's really worth noting that when Sangman is passing with these garnets, to him it doesn't really make that big of a difference, right? Like, as I've said a couple times, he's still going to have the most, probably by quite a bit. And it's not like the garnets are going to the bandage young. They're staying in play. It's not, nothing's coming out of the prize pool. He just gets to keep not taking these cubes. And also gets to then win and keep the token of immortality. So this is yet another really good time to be Sangman. G1 takes the minus 33 cube, which is, you know, the third worst in the deck. But there is an interesting idea in taking that cube. He takes it for 12 chips and a garnet. And while it is a bad number, no one at that point is going to take minus 34 or minus 35. So when those do come up, he can keep passing them around and get rich, and they don't even hurt his score unless one of them's, unless minus 34 is the one that got removed.
And the hope there is that you can scoop up all of those, I guess, high, but you can scoop up all of those numbers with a high absolute value, so like the lowest numbers in the set, and then someone else will have to pick up, let's say, minus 18 and minus 22, just a few numbers which are low enough, which are quite low, and which they can't connect properly, so that their total will be higher than yours. And so your minus 33 cube, and that's the only one that counts, is going to still be lower than that. But in the meantime, you've been scooping up all of these chips and potentially all of these garnets as well.
Right. Now, the problem arises when you're G1, and yes, you have all these chips and garnets now, but you take the minus 31 and the minus 35 before the minus 32 or minus 34 come up. So now you're doubling the risk, where if either of those is missing, you are going to have a massive number. So that is the risk, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, the order that these numbers come out in is so crucial.
And also, if somebody else wants to make you lose, they can just take the minus 32 cube, and now you can't connect your two low numbers, and your number that's in the minus 60s or minus 70s is almost certainly going to be the lowest.
Yeah, definitely. So there is a lot of risk to this strategy, where, yes, if things go right, you can get rich and maintain a reasonably a number that's not always going to lose, but you certainly do open yourself up for a lot of disaster scenarios. Okay.
And there's a separate issue too, which is if somebody else is going for the same strategy, they might just pick up another low cube without even intending to derail what you're doing. And we see this with Johan, who comes in with the same mindset of, I'm going to take a low number, collect all of these low numbers, and do exactly the same thing the G1's doing, but if two people are doing that strategy, both of them are almost guaranteed to fail.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, when they're competing for the same numbers, it's double suicide. I guess double homicide, I guess, is the less depressing way to view it. Yeah, okay. So yeah, this is an interesting spot, right, where Johan gets the minus 6, and then the next number to come up is minus 7, so he, of course, can take that at no penalty. The next number up is minus 30, and he snap takes that one as well, and it looks like he is really committing here to getting Sangman to use that token. Like, at least, you know, Sangman either win, or he can himself get last and pick him and at least make him burn it or do something. Like, we can't just let another round go by where Sangman doesn't really have to do anything and he keeps the token.
Johan seems content here to just scoop up all of the numbers he can, get himself into last so that he can pick Sangman and try to take him down, which you have to kind of admire the gumption on one level, but at the same time, but if you can't guarantee that Sangman won't be first, you could end up in a spot where you secure your own spot in the deathmatch, and then you have to end up playing against, like, G1, for instance.
Right, that's the problem, is when Sangman, when he has so many garnets, can theoretically just keep spending all of them and end up probably with 0 points. Like, I'm sure if he had been so inclined, he could have passed every cube that was presented to him. So that is the issue here when, you are Yuan and you're trying to get last so you can pick Sangmin and get him to burn it, it's going to be tough for Sangmin to be eligible when you're taking all of the high numbers and someone else has got to beat him when he can comfortably pass on everything. Yeah. So that at least a potential flaw in the plan. But I at least like that he's pursuing some angle to do something to Sangmin. So actually, I'll give some credit here to your boy Junghyun, who decides in the middle of this game, while everyone else is trying to get Sangmin to burn some garnets and potentially not win, Junghyun probably correctly realizes that the best long-term bet is to get basically under Sangmin's win, almost a la Sung Yu here.
Yeah, and we see Junghyun start this approach in the previous game in God's Judgment, where he effectively buys Sangmin as a partner when they're discussing and exchanging dice, because I think he realizes that you can either be you can either align with a person who has a lot of power, or you can try to take them down. And if you are the figurehead of the people that are trying to take him down, then if that effort fails, then you end up in the hot seat. And so I think Junghyun, also just by his personality, where he doesn't want to be the guy leading the charge there, he decides to take the less controversial option, side with Sangmin, and hope that he can ride that for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I'm shocked that this dude is a politician who's just willing to blindly bend to the powers that be, regardless of what it means for the little guy. Yeah, I loved he takes the minus 28, he being Junghyun, to really put himself at risk on Sangmin's behalf, and now he needs the minus 22 cube or he's going to lose, and they start shouting, Jinho, give us the minus 22, give us the minus 22. And it is, like, I watched this show Crime Scene that Jinho is on both seasons of, and the second place thing, as well as his bad pronunciation, I'm not kidding, it comes up, like, way more than half the episodes. It comes up all the time. Like, that just follows Jinho everywhere he goes, to the point that 2:22, either AM or PM, is apparently called the Kong's hour in Korea.
Yeah, and it must be so tilting when you are like one of the best in the world at a certain thing, and yet the only thing that you're remembered for is not being exactly the best at it. Because if you said, like, okay, this guy has high finishes in like however many prestigious StarCraft tournaments, you would think, okay, this guy is really good at this. But instead it's, oh, well, he didn't win all of them, so he must be terrible. Like, it's kind of a weird way to think about it.
Yeah, I saw a graphic, I don't remember if it was on The Genius or on Crime Scene, that I was watching recently, about Jinho, where he had zero major championship wins, and weirdly and perfectly, he had 22 second place finishes. Which in is major just, championships.
Like, for the first few, you start to think, okay, that's just variance, eventually it's going to even out and I'm gonna win one of these things. At what point do you start to think, maybe there's something deeper going on here?
Yeah, Amanda Kimmel and Russell Hance are, like, super jealous now. Yeah.
So Yuan then picks up the minus 30 cube, which is very odd given that, firstly, it's a large number and you don't want to be landed with that. But secondly, it also means he's going to be fighting with G1 over, like, minus 31 and minus 32 when they start coming around. And this becomes relevant when the minus 34 cube comes up after the first break. Yuan has to borrow a garnet to keep this one going around the table, and he ends up being stuck with it. So now he has minus 30 and minus 34, but G1 has minus 33. So there's no chance that he can even connect the two of those. So one of them for sure is going to count, and the other one is very likely to as well, unless he can somehow get around that. So coming out of round two now, G1 and Yuan both think that they're ruined, and it seems overwhelmingly likely that one of them is going to be going to the deathmatch here. And Sangmin, meanwhile, it seems to be in a good position. You know, he's only picked up the minus 9 cube and the minus 5 cube, and so his total is pretty low, and he can keep using the massive stash of garnets that he has amassed to keep passing on cubes as and when he likes. So the minus 35 cube comes up now, and Hongchul makes a big production of pretending to take it from Yuan and just completely sinking him, and then backs out, which made for some good TV. And then Junghyun eventually takes it once it becomes absolutely stacked with chips and garnets, which, you know, now he is also in the race for being last, and Sangmin is just standing there laughing to himself.
Yeah, I think I said earlier that G1 was the one who took the 35 to, like, demonstrate, because first of all, because I thought that's what happened, and secondly, to demonstrate, like, a strategic idea of why maybe taking the high numbers is bad. I think you are right, though, that it was Junghyun. And yeah, these are a lot of bold moves going on here, and I think constantly it has to be going through Sangmin's mind, at least at this point, when he's seeing particularly Yuan, I want to start saying it the right way, the Dom way, which is rarely the right way, but in this case it is. I feel like Sangmin's got to be concerned that as soon as he drops below first place, someone's just going to suicide to get rid of his token of immortality.
Well, if you were Sangmin, how seriously would you be concerned about that? Because it seems like someone would have to be okay with going to the deathmatch, even though they knew they would have no control over what happened once they got there. So we know that people like Yoan are gamers who might be able to consider that idea, but it's hard to imagine people actually wanting to pull the trigger.
I agree that it's hard to imagine in general people wanting to pull the trigger on that. However, Yoan is a poker player, and Yoan understands how expected value works, and I think he recognizes that his expected value increases drastically when Sangmin is not essentially immune for all of the endgame. So I think if anyone historically would be willing to pull the trigger there, or if Sangmin had reason to be concerned about anyone pulling the trigger, Yoan would be the one he would be concerned about.
Yeah, I guess the idea would be, as we get down to like Final 5 and Final 4, at some point, if Sangmin doesn't win a main match, which seems wildly implausible at this stage, but in the best case scenario where that happens, you want him to have burned the token beforehand so that it's not reduced just down to the two or three of you that are left. Because,
right,
you know, either you do this now, or at some point in the future, you go to the deathmatch when, had Sangmin not had the token, he would be taken there instead. So if you think about it that way, you may as well do it now, I guess, when you potentially have weaker opponents to choose from.
That's exactly right. And I think I would be pretty confident in saying that's precisely what Yoan was thinking, is we've got to get rid of this thing. This is only going to keep getting more powerful. Like he kept talking about, we need to get rid of his shield to get into the bank.
Yeah. I also think you can use the fact that you're going on this suicide mission, if you like, to extract promises from the other non-Sangmin contestants. So you can say to them, look, I'm willing to take the sacrifice and go to the deathmatch just to burn the token. I need to know that after that happens, whoever I go up against, I'm going to have your support to stay if it's something that you can help me with. Or even if it isn't, I need to have, you know, garnets if I need them or anything else.
No, absolutely. But I mean, I think, like we saw, the way that Yoan plays when Sangmin has the token near the end, Yoan recognized by similar logic, if I just propel Sangmin to first place, my odds of losing are actually, like, I'm less likely to go home than if I actually try to take my, like, 20% shot at getting first place myself. Because that's not going to, just the percentage of the time that it's going to work out, you're far better off just propelling Sangmin to victory.
Yeah, and it struck me that the only plan that Yoan could conceivably like come up with and follow through with is one in which he guarantees himself a loss in the main match, because any other plan would not be could not be trusted on to work.
he's a specialist at losing on the genius. That's his tactic.
Yeah, so Jonghyun has just taken the -35, and at this point it looks like it's going to be he, Yoan, and G1 in contention for that last place spot. And conversely, Sangmin, Yuyong, and Hongchul all seem to be in decent positions. So Hongchul now buys the -26 cube, which Yoan is certainly not amused about. Then G1, who already has -33, buys -31, which Yoan is also not amused about. So nothing seems to be going well for Yoan here. And Yuyong has -15 and -17, and if she can connect those, then suddenly she's looking in a very good position to win the entire thing here, because Sangmin has this reserve of garnets and chips to draw upon, but his point total will still be fairly close to hers. So if she can make something happen there, then she could steal it from under his nose. The -32 cube comes out and G1 is saved. So now we get this big reveal that Junghyun has been working with Sangmin this whole time, and the idea now is to take Yoan's strategy and almost flip it on its head. So when Sangmin does have the lead, and Junghyun is going to just take all of the remaining cubes that he can without assuming the mantle of the loser and end the game on the spot, and then Sangmin can give him the token of life and the two of them will be safe. However, because it's Junghyun, this naturally backfires in a spectacular way, and he ends up going over the threshold and becoming the loser now.
Yeah, that's why it's such an ambitious play. Because the problem is, sure, if you can manage to not come in last place, Sangmin will probably give you that token of life and you're not going to get picked for the deathmatch. But if the wrong number is the one that got randomly removed from the beginning, he can't give you a token of life if you're already in the deathmatch.
Right. And one other thing that is interesting here is Sangmin wins, of course, but Yuyong ends up being a joint winner. And it's fun to think that if Sangmin had used one more chip and one fewer garnet, then Yuyong might be the sole winner by 1 point. And you think about the ripples that could have throughout the entire season, where presumably now Junghyun would receive pressure from the others to pick Sangmin here and burn the token. And if that happened, then Sangmin might get targeted in future rounds. Even if he was still there in the endgame, then he wouldn't have the token at final four to give to Yoan. So maybe Yoan gets taken in there and he has a different finals opponent. Like, everything could potentially change after that point if, you know, one small thing changes here.
Right, like, assuming they all draw the same roles, he probably still wins the next week's game with the Season 1 people that we're going to talk about next, the layoff game. But you're absolutely right. The game with Super Junior, where Yoan essentially handed it to him, and then the elevator game probably still goes his way if he's still there. But you are right. This has tremendous implications if Sangmin just passes with one more chip instead of a Garnet. So, once again, using that brilliant Sangmin intuition to pass on just the right amount. Yeah. So Sangmin is your winner here, and Yu Young, as you mentioned, is also a joint winner, and it is crazy to have a tie in this game, just given the weirdness of how the numbers are going to get distributed, plus all of the chips factoring into it.
Yeah, I do wonder if Sangmin had been the sole winner, who he would have given the Token of Life to. I think it's possible that it just would have been Yu Young anyway, but maybe it's G1, maybe it's somebody else, or I doubt it would be Hongqiu, but that could be interesting to see as well if Junghyun had to pick someone different.
So, and incidentally, Yoan, despite just playing a game where Garnets are getting tossed around like fucking hotcakes, still manages to end this game with zero Garnets. Yeah. So, Junghyun is going to be playing in the deathmatch. He ends up picking Hongqiu here, and they're playing the same picture hunt, which is actually the game that Sangmin lost to Kyungran at the final 3-1 that we will be shortly getting into, where we talked about in our Season 1 podcast, the correct idea being... all you have to do is just match when you're the person, you know, match the incorrect guesses from the person who starts out at a disadvantage and never give them any information that you don't have to when you're the person who starts out two spaces ahead. And unlike Sangmin, the greatest player in Genius history, your boy Junghyun finds the right strategy and matches the letters.
Was there ever any doubt? Seriously?
I thought at first, honestly, that he had legitimately forgotten what the symbol for T was.
That would make sense. I think Hongqiu thought that as well, like looking over. But of course, there was some secret master plan behind it.
So this actually, you know, there's not much, a whole lot to say. We talked at length about same picture hunt and why this strategy is so clearly correct. I guess I'll throw the number back out there again. The official accountant of this podcast, our good friend AJ Van Gilder, ran the numbers, and it is 76% likely that if you just match the person who's behind, if you just match their wrong answers, it is 76% likely that they will fall off before you do, just all things being equal. So certainly the way to go. Good on Junghyun for recognizing it. I'm happy to give your boy some props here. So, of course, this is going to be very sadly, and once again, another whole main match goes by where we barely talk about Hongqiu, even in the episode that he gets eliminated. I think he spent the majority of this game just being given Garnets and chips by other people to keep passing so that the cubes could go where they were supposed to go. Because, I mean, and honestly, job well done to not even really be close to last year for Hongqiu, when he's really not in a position to ever really get first the way this game is going to get played. But that is the end of Hongqiu. I know I was heartbroken, particularly because I was not nearly as much of a Junghyun fan as you are.
Well, that's your problem, not mine. But yeah, Hongqiu, you can tell by this guy is a professional entertainer. Like, he is just magic every time he's on the screen.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You're not even sick enough to have been rooting for Junghyun here.
Not in the moment, but you know, now that I have opened my eyes to the truth of Junghyun, I would be happy with either outcome.
Well, let's get this out there right now, because it hasn't come up yet on parts one or two, but I don't want to forget to mention it. Junghyun will be back for All-Stars. How excited are you?
Oh, I am over the moon. Like, if Junghyun can somehow win the Genius Grand Final, I will, you know, just shut it down right there. My life will be complete.
I mean, what more fitting of a way to go out than Junghyun just kind of derping his way to this immortal, like, cast, this epic season, and then this guy comes out on top,
Look, maybe it's all a fantastic long con. Like, he puts this front on in this season to guarantee his return spot, and then he comes back and just reveals his true genius and destroys them all. It's fantastic.
I mean, if he was a genius, he wouldn't have been out of the political game by the time he was, like, 42. So that is the end of Hongqiu. Very sad to see him go. Obviously, too bad that he can't be back there for All-Stars, but really love everything. He really didn't get enough credit. As far as what he brought to the season in just what we focus on in these podcasts, because he really did add a whole new layer to the season that I think was a really, really good, really welcome. So yeah, that is the end of Hongchul, and we will move on now to episode 9, and this is the layoff game, and this is actually a lot like just the corporate food chain, essentially, although there are like salaries and so on. It's really complicated. No one understands it.
Yeah, it took me until my third viewing, intently watching it with the help of the cheat sheet that Bumdiddlyumptious has prepared, to actually understand what was going on here. And I think it's revealing that this is the only game that he or she chose to give this additional explanation for.
Well, this is the only one where it was necessary, because this is the only game that even you and I, being like big fans of games and having studied food chain intensely, whichever one's correct in that context, still could not comprehend, even upon multiple viewings with a cheat sheet. So I would say this is going to be probably the most complicated game. And with that in mind, let's try to just talk about this in more general terms, I would say, because I will not even be able to follow this if we get too detailed.
Yeah, not going to get bogged down in the details, because firstly, nobody cares. And secondly, I don't think we would be able to do it properly. But, you know, with that in mind, so the basic idea here is, it's a variation of the food chain game, the main differences being that there are 3 departments instead of 4, which I think the main impact of that is going to be it's much more difficult to avoid one particular person. Like, if one person needs to kill you and they have 2 rounds left to do it, then it's much easier for them to just coincidentally end up in the right department.
Right, you can luck into a lot more, or get unlucky a lot more often here, just because there's fewer rooms to go to, and thus people have a higher chance of just guessing correctly.
Yeah. The other aspect here is the salaries, which adds this interesting dimension where the people who are the predators in this scenario, so Director Lee, Head of Department Park, and Deputy Head of Department Shim, their win conditions involve firing people with a certain salary total. So Director Lee, for instance, so Sangmin's role, his firings must total at least 120 million won, and each other worker has a certain salary. So in effect, it acts like a bounty, where the bounties on some people's heads are much higher than those on others. And so if you're the intern, for instance, and your salary is 10 million won, well, it might not even be worth killing you if you're there with literally any other person, just because it doesn't really help you contribute to your total.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. And I think this was another one of those games, potentially, where even the players didn't understand it, despite running a rehearsal. I don't think any of them probably fully understand how this worked. And I think it's also, before we bury the lead here, we have Season 1 people back to play this game with us.
And one of them is Sungyu!
Sungyu!
Sungmin!
Yeah, that was awesome. Sangmin and Sungyu finally having a nice reunion hug. We also have Yuram, Junsak, Jungmoon, Changyap, and Kyungran. Incidentally, I love it when they drew the characters for the practice round, and Sangmin got one of the ones in the couple, and he immediately asked the dealers, is the other one Sungyu?
And it was, great. Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, it's amazing that they haven't even like lost a step there. I guess absence might make the heart grow fonder.
I wonder if Sungyu follows him on Twitter yet.
I was just about to say, absence from his Twitter feed makes the heart grow fonder, because no, he doesn't. Yeah, which is hilarious, because Sungyu seems to like legitimately really respect and always follow Sangmin someday, but he will not always follow him on Twitter. It's too much for me. Like, Twitter is more respect than he's willing to give him, but he is willing to commit his entire game to him. All right, so I guess let's just get into this as best we can, because really the way this game plays out, the way the roles end up getting drawn in the final version, a lot of the Season 1 players have overlapping win conditions, and it just came down to which of the Season 2 players drew Director Lee. And who would have ever guessed that Sangmin draws like God yet again, and has Director Lee?
Well, also, I think even if Sangmin had drawn a different role, one which was maybe less compatible with the Season 1 people, they would have wanted to try to work with him regardless, and it just so happened that he drew the perfect role to make that happen.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And let me ask you this, because I tried to attribute a lot of that to his role just worked so well with them. But I think you are right that they probably would have, if the Season 1 people could vote on who got to come out of that game with the token of life, they would probably end up picking Sangmin. Do you think that basically, maybe not in any game, but in any game kind of like this, Sangmin always would have had an advantage just having Season 1 people there?
I think so, yeah. And you can illustrate that, I think, by looking at the other two games this season which had external players coming in. So we have the Big Deal game that's coming up in the next episode, where we have Super Junior coming in, and then Snakes and Ladders, where we have the previous Season 2 cast members. And you look at the differences between all of them, and I think the Big Deal game, for instance, played out a lot more organically than the other two. Because in both cases, the players who were coming in already knew the metagame and were part of it, whereas the Super Junior people didn't really have a vested interest in any given outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the fat kid from Super Junior was like a big fan of the genius, and he was awesome, and I can't wait to talk about him. But and so I'm guessing he was probably a big Sangman fan, but I think he wanted the $5,000 more than anything else.
Yeah, and as musicians, like maybe they were rooting for Sangman because of that connection, but who knows?
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think. Maybe it's just because Sangman is so good, and maybe, hey, the players all know that outside guests and maybe former players from this season or previous seasons are going to come in, and that's a thing that's going to happen on The Genius. And Sangman like is really strong when that's going to be the case, because he is just so good with people. But I would say that it is kind of an unfair advantage, just having Season 1 people in particular back.
Yeah, so having those people there who are more inclined to help Sangwin, and then him also drawing the perfect role, like, okay, sure, he played well to get that outcome, but also there was a lot of luck involved.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe some people more so than others, if it was the case that Sangwin just drew like a completely incompatible role with most of the other Season 1 people, I think they probably would have recognized that it's going to look really bad if we go really far out of our way just to give Sangman a win.
Yeah, I think you would have seen more fractures among the Season 1 cast members, because as it was, the only time we ever saw them really deviate from the expected line was towards the end when Jun Sok had to evade being killed because the plan got messed up. I think you would have seen, like, maybe Sungyu wants to work with Sangmin, but Kyungran wants to work with someone else, or, you know, stuff like that happening where they kind of branch off and do their own thing. But as it was easy, and it made sense for them to just sit together and help one person. And that person happened to be Sangmin, who, you know, they wanted to enable a win for.
Right. I think everything kind of came together perfectly for Sangmin here. He had the, you know, a solid leg up just in the dark, and then drew perfectly. Of course, we have to mention my old Twitter header photo that I thought was okay and not too much of a spoiler, because Sangmin came into this episode with the yellow hair. When all of the Season 1 people are talking in the attic and Yeowon comes by to like gather them up to come talk to him, and it cuts to that, they go have their conversation, and then later we get the rewind where as he's pulling them out of the attic room, Sangmin's there hiding behind the door after having talked to them, is just amazing. That's like probably my favorite shot in Season 2.
It's so great, yeah.
Yeah, that's just phenomenal. That's like, it's just so run-of-the-mill even for Sangmin too. Like, and he doesn't even necessarily have to play up like how stealthy he's being hiding behind the door. He could just be standing there, but he's like got his back pressed up against it, like leaning over to the side. Constant showman. I really like it. So I guess a couple other things just to get into, other points of interest from this game. I thought it was interesting that the prince, which is one of the roles, knows the CEO for sure. And meanwhile, Yeowon claims to be the CEO, even when he knows that the prince is going to know that he's lying.
Which is classic Yeowon. Yeah, just do something that's going to easily be like categorically disproven.
Yeah, like he's sitting there trying to convince Yuram that he's the president, which he knows with certainty that it's Chang Hyap. Yeah, so it really, I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to whether Sangmin's going to fire Junsok or G1, and we kind of got into that where it got a little mangled, and Junsok ended up off in manufacturing, I think, instead of HR, and as a result, Chang Hyap loses, but it doesn't really do anything as far as the actual Season 2 players are concerned. That has no impact on that. Sangmin's still going
to
win here.
Yeah, I wonder what you can read into that about how Season 4 might go with regards to Junsok and the Season 1 cast members and even Sangmin.
Well, we haven't broken the news. We have now hit on the five people from Season 2 who are going to be back in Jinho, Sangmin, Lawyer Yoon-sun, Jung-hyun, and whoever I'm forgetting, Yeowon. But we haven't talked about the Season 1 people. We still, of course, have Jinho and Sangmin. We will have Kyungran back. And then Junsok, I think, is going to surprise a few people. You know, the first boot from Season 1. He will be back for the All-Stars. And I feel like, again, I'm forgetting someone from Season 1. Who else is going to be there from Season 1, Dom, if anyone?
Yeah, so from Season 1, we're going to see Jinho, obviously, Kyungran, Unfortunately, no Song Yu because he had other commitments, I believe. But Jung Moon, who might be the dark horse here, and also Jun Sok, who you can question the wisdom of bringing the first ever boot from the juniors back for an All-Star season. But if he somehow manages to win, then that would be like the perfect ending, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I feel like, as they set it up at the time, Jun Sok was someone who seemed highly, highly capable. And he certainly seemed to do all right in this game. Like, I don't think it was his fault that he ended up in the wrong spot. Not, like, he ended up in the right spot, if I'm remembering correctly. Like, he ended up living. He's certainly someone that I'm going to have my eye out for Season 4. Enough Season 4, Dom. Stop bringing up Season 4. Okay, so after everything shakes out here, Sangmin is, of course, going to be one of the winners, and Jiwon actually also wins here. So they are going to choose out of the remaining people who is going to be the deathmatch candidate. And I thought it was actually interesting. Jiwon basically puts it all on Sangmin. He says, I don't think he framed it as, I don't want responsibility for this or anything. I think he framed it as, Sangmin, you've earned the right to make this decision. But I still did think that was interesting to kind of, like, remove any possible blood from his hands, you know, moments after he's just gotten his token of life and has passed to the next round.
Yeah, and that seems almost sinister when you consider that Sangmin, earlier in the episode, was saying the two targets that he had in mind for that round were G1 and Yu Yong. So G1 kind of abdicating a responsibility for that, it is fine, but you have to think if he was eligible to be picked, then maybe he would have been.
I'm sitting here thinking now, between the three parts, I'm pretty sure in each of the parts I've highlighted some kind of, like, G1 strategic idea that I actually like. I think it was when he was playing Sun Moon Star, and then also when he offered Yoon Sung Garnets to not pick him, and then she lost, so she never had to pay him. Like, these are actually some pretty good ideas here from G1.
Is G1 your Junghyun, then?
I think he might be. I don't know. I don't think I have the love for him that you have for Junghyun. And hey, by the way, in breaking news, gay marriage now legal in America. So Dom, you and Junghyun, welcome here anytime.
Beautiful. Love it.
Yeah. Yu Young is picked for the death match. She picks Junghyun, and they are going to be playing Black and White, which is a new game where everyone gets tiles numbered 0 through 8. And the even-numbered tiles are black, and the odd-numbered tiles are white. And they're basically playing war, but they can see with the other person. Whoever goes first has to put theirs down, and the other person can make their decision based on what color that tile is.
When you say they're playing war, I assume that's not a metaphor, and it is the name of an actual game.
Have you never heard of the card game War, where it's just showdowns, basically? Like, everyone just flips the card. It's like a heads-up game where two people just flip the top card of their deck, and whoever has the higher card takes both of them.
So basically, it's just another game that has a real-life parallel, then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just 100% luck, but it's a fun game. So this is, I think, an interesting death match here, because as we end up seeing, I think kind of the level one idea is both people, and understandably so, want to keep their higher-numbered tiles for the later rounds, so when the points are really critical, they have the more powerful tiles. But I think the better idea, or just the more meaningful strategic idea, and we see Yeowon take great advantage of this later on down the line, is it's not like, if you can get 5 points before we're gone through all of our tiles, we don't have to play through all of them. So there is an idea that we'll get to when we talk about, I think it was the final five death match, where Yeowon just tears apart whoever it was, where he
That's
was playing.
Junghyun, I'll have you know.
Oh, so final three. Sorry, excuse me. Final three deathmatch. I knew Yeowon was part of it, and I knew he was immune at final four, so I went with final five. Yeah, that's right, where he just destroys him because he anticipates the level one play, which is very exploitable.
I think Junghyun let him win, but regardless. This deathmatch is, again, one of these things we talked about with the genius, where it's a very simple concept, but it's always going to be interesting in practice. And we see this game played multiple times in this season and a few different variants of it played in season 3, and each time there's a kind of fresh element to it. So it's a simple game, but one which is going to be constantly entertaining.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of room for play based on the individuals. And Dom mentioned, there are two different variants of this game in Season 3, both of which are a lot better than this version of it. So you have that to be looking forward to if you haven't seen Season 3 somehow by now.
Yeah, this one had a certain charm to it, I think. But regardless, let's talk about this quickly, because I think if you told people that this deathmatch is going to be Junghyun versus Yu Yong, that isn't a matchup which you would think is going to be contending like high-level strategic play or is going to be very entertaining. But I actually thought there was a lot of layers to what happened here.
Yeah.
So at the start, Yu Yong says that she wants to use smaller numbers, and Junghyun doesn't say that explicitly, but you can tell that he's kind of thinking the same thing. So For the first round, he uses 3, she uses 2. So he gains a point right at the start, with both of them using the same strategy. And he knows at that point that Yuyong has burned one of her smaller even number tiles. So then she plays 0 and is now down 0-2. So she probably has to use a higher number soon, or so you would think. So Junghyun, knowing this, can afford to use a low one to avoid burning one of his own good tiles there. So Yuyong thinks a step above him and uses 1 to his 0, regaining a point while not using any of her better tiles.
Right. The underlying idea behind this game is you want to win by a little bit and lose by a lot. And this was a really heads-up play here from Yuyong when she's down 2-0, and she sees that she knows that Junghyun hasn't used his 0 yet because he's won the first 2 points. And the 0 is a really, really interesting tile in this game, and it would be the 1 if 1 was the lowest number, where there is no way to get a win with a 0. You have to find a way to burn it. The best you can do is draw. So you really want to be getting rid of your 0 when you think someone else is going to be on a high number, and I think that's exactly what Junghyun was thinking here, is, oh, she's going to be desperate, she's going to put down something at least in the middle, but a really, really heads-up play. And this is a play that, if this goes wrong, say he puts down his 4 instead of his 0 or whatever, this is the end of the game for Yuyong. But she went for it, and it really worked out, and I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, so that was really smart. So soon it's tied 2-2. Yuyong plays 4 and loses, so she knows that only the 1 tile from Junghyun's side hasn't been played yet. So in the following round, he plays a white tile, and it is the 1. And then Yuyong plays her 3 tile, and it's 3-3 again. And then Yuyong goes for 7, hoping to take the lead, and it's a draw, which is going to become a recurring theme throughout not only this heat of the game, but also the second heat of the game that they're forced to have because the final outcome of the first one is a draw.
Right, exactly. They both kind of take, like, the thinking player, but what we always talk about level 1, like the very basic, just examine the logic, and this on the surface seems like the right idea, is keep my higher titles for later. When both people are doing that, as we see here, you are going to wind up with a decent number of draws here where they are going to have a rematch, just because when they're both playing low tiles early and high tiles late, there are going to be a lot of trading points and pushes.
Yeah, so they have to play their second heat now. It starts off with another draw with both of them playing 3, and then Junghyun plays a white tile and Yuyong plays 1. So Yuyong plays 0, Junghyun plays 2. So again, he wins by a very small margin, but yeah, a point is a point, and now he takes the lead again. And then she plays black, and he plays white, and she wins. So she knows that he's played his smaller tiles. Then they both play 4, so another tie. And then Yuyong plays 5, and Junghyun kind of thinks about it for a bit, and then uses one of his larger tiles to go up 6-5. And now they both have 7 and 8 remaining, so the game is effectively over.
Yeah, that is the other thing, is there are going to be a lot of timelines. And once again, we saw this come into play in the Yeowon versus Junghyun match, where, while it may not be officially over, by process of elimination of certain tiles, there are going to be plenty of spots where the game is, in all practical terms, like, it can't be won by the other side. And in particular, if someone is down in points and still has their 0 when the other person doesn't have their 0, that's another automatic point for the person who's already ahead.
Yeah, and it's another one of these games where taking the initiative and having a lead early just creates, like, this cascading advantage where every single one of your opponent's plays from that point forward has to be perfect, or the game can just be over on the spot.
Right. And one thing I want to talk about, just as far as it pertains to death matches in general, because I think this is a great example of it. A lot of the times we'll see people, in certain death matches at least, practice, or in death matches that we see repeatedly, people kind of, like, talk about the game and adjust and so on. Yeowon, as we see highlighted later on in the season, is paying a lot of attention to how these people are playing this game, but he is not going around coaching them, and that comes in really, really handy for him down the line. I'm curious what you think about if you are one of these people who is not in the death match, but someone you like is in the death match and you'd like to see them stick around. What's your take on how much to coach them on a game you think you might see again down the line?
Yeah, it's another thing that's reminiscent of King of the Nerds, where, like, they split off into groups to prepare for the nerd off, and it always struck me that the choice of who you help there says a lot about what your priorities are and who you like better and who you want to work with more. And that doesn't really seem to be the case here. I mean, you do have times where it's somebody from one team versus somebody from another team, and it just splits across those lines. But you do see these other times where it's, oh, well, a few people are helping this person, so I should just go and help out the other one, even though I might prefer that the other one stay, just to keep it fair and even.
No, I do. I think that is interesting as well, for sure, is, you know, just the decision of who to help in any given deathmatch. assuming they're not like some close ally of yours that ended up in the death match just by, for, you know, whatever the reason was. There is like a lot to, I wonder what the protocol is even in just like abstaining from helping people. It's hard. I always feel like it's always like Jinho helping someone and Yoan helping the other person. Sure. And then we never really see anything from anyone else. And actually, I don't even know if this was one that they got to practice. I don't think this one requires too much practice, but I do think it is just in general, not even who you're helping, but even if you do genuinely want the person that you're coaching to stick around, I could see there being some ideas of not actually giving them like all of your thoughts on whatever their death match is going to be in case you, because unlike King of the Nerds, the genius repeats death matches. You may easily find yourself in that same death match down the line.
Yeah, and that makes me wonder, actually, going into Season 4, where we know that some of the death matches are going to come up again, you know, the people that played them the first time round, or at least the people who paid attention while they were being played in the main room on their season the first time round might have an edge there.
Yeah.
For the question of how people decide who to help, you do get a lot of these games where it's based on being given information, so like Sun, Moon, Star, where... or Rock, Paper, Scissors, or whatever it is, where it's like, okay, I picked Star, or I picked Scissors. And typically what we see is they either give them to both people, or if they've pledged to only help one person, they tend not to actively lie to the other one. It's more just like, okay, well, I promised your opponent that I was going to help them, so I can't help you, and I'm sorry. But it doesn't really turn adversarial, it doesn't seem like.
Right, it's never a situation where it's them helping one person and then pretending to help the other person and giving them bad information.
Yeah, like there was the Blackout game where Jiwon screwed over Doohee again, but I think that was exceptional for a few different reasons. And with those games where the other players get to have a say in what happens, typically what you see, and I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on this, is it seems like the attitude is the game is supposed to be played between the two of you. So we're going to give you information, and we're going to give you both the same information so that we don't actually have that kind of impact on it, and let it be played just... between the two of you as if it was just a normal deathmatch.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's overly spoilery to say that in Season 3 there is a deathmatch where they both openly say, we're happy to both have perfect information and we'll play this ourselves. You guys don't need to pick a side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think there really is something to that on The Genius where people have that kind of underlying sense of like fair play and gamesmanship where they don't want to just completely end it for someone and not even give them a fighting chance.
It makes me wonder if somebody went against that and was gaming as hard as possible, what would the response of the others be? Because immediately it might be to try and take down that person in future weeks. But you know, if you have a deathmatch coming up and you know that this one person is going to be, you know, lying, giving false information, doing everything they can to either win themselves or get the outcome that they want, then as someone who might not be inclined to play that way, do you think, well, I now have to do that, even though I don't want to, just to not let this person overrun us?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would. I mean, I don't know, but I would guess that someone going in there and gaming super hard would probably ostracize themselves pretty quickly, both with the other players and with, probably more importantly, with the viewing audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that would be... I certainly don't think it's anything we'd ever realistically run into. Certainly knowing the players who are going to be there for the final season, I think it's safe to say that that's not going to happen. But I feel like it's just a thing in Korea that's just not how games are played there. Yeah, and I kind of like that. Like, on one hand, I do like the, like, just hardcore competitiveness, like, kill 'em all attitude that some American players take. But I do also like, because this is a... It's not like we're only doing this for people that we feel bad for. We would do this for anyone. Like, even as badly as we want potentially, like, Sangmin out of a season, we're still going to give him a fighting chance.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So that is going to be the end of Yu Young here. Any parting thoughts on Yu Young? Because I actually really liked Yu Young. I was sort of surprised not to see her back for All-Stars.
Yeah, the first time round, she doesn't really stand out too much until the Doohee incident, after which point you're not really inclined to root for her, even if you don't see anything wrong with what she did. But watching this recently, she definitely stood out as both an impressive player and, as you were saying, one of the biggest snubs for Season 4.
Yeah, I think there is something to the rewatch factor, in particular with the women, and sex is ban alert, but it does take us quite a while. Typically, when we're starting a new season that we're watching for the first time, it takes me at least probably 3 or 4 episodes to really get everyone's name down and so forth. And the women just tend to be kind of like the lower profile characters in general for the most part, and none of them really look that distinct from what I can tell from the from most of the other women, whereas with the guys, like, Kim Gura really stands out as distinct looking from Jin-ho. Okay. I'm really touching on some racial and gender issues here, but people know what I mean, where I think Yu-Young, when you know immediately from episode one who Yu-Young is, brings a lot more to the season than when you're trying to differentiate her from whomever for the duration of the first six episodes.
Okay, it's officially confirmed that all non-American people look the same.
That is not what I said at all, Don.
Sorry like that, but yeah, and Yu-Young, I think, take age into account though as well, because this is a show where the older guys typically are the ones who have the most influence, and so for her, as I think she was 20 when she played in season 2, you know, for her to do what she did in terms of like getting people together, playing aggressively, and making herself be listened to was pretty impressive, I thought.
Well, I didn't realize she was only 20, and the same thing, I guess I did know it about Jung-moon, but it never like was anything that was at the forefront of my mind that Jung-moon was so young during season 1 too.
Yeah, and it's not a perfect correlation. Like, we see Jung-hyun is, I think, the oldest member of the season 2 cast and probably the least respected as well. And in a society that values age and is very hierarchical, if that's even a word, then I think if anyone who's able to kind of jump past their station is deserves more praise than maybe they get.
Yeah, okay. Well, I really, really like Yu-Young, and that is going to be the end of that. So we will move on now to episode 10, and this is the big deal game. And this, Dom, is just for the record, and we will get, of course, this will come into play. This is the last round, now that we're at four people, that the Token of Immortality can be played. Because obviously, if it's valid at Final 3, no one else even needs to show up. Sangmin can just, they can just show up and play a death match, and Sangmin can hang out until the finals. And we talked a little bit in one of the earlier parts. I think this is one round too long for the Token of Immortality. I think it should have been expired at Final 5 just because of the impact that it can have here, where Sangmin, not only after winning the main match, he gets the Token of Life himself. He also then picks who's joining him at the Final 3.
Yeah, it's the same principle with the Hidden Immunity Idols on Survivor, where Final 5 seems like the last realistic time that you can have it not be dangerous.
Yeah. And the only way, I guess, that the Token of Immortality cannot be played here on Sangmin, if he doesn't win the main match himself, is if two people tie for first place, then Sangmin would have to go to the death match and the Token of Immortality would be invalidated. But other than that, he's got a free pass here.
Yeah, and I guess in a game like this, you can't really engineer that outcome where two people tie for first and neither of them are Sangmin. So, you know, as fun as that would be to see and to think about, it's never really going to come into play.
Right. I mean, just the way, as we'll get to, the way the game is going to work, when there are team members, like both parts of both teams are playing against both parts of all the other teams, it's just not going to work. Like, collusion at Final Four is not going to work here to isolate one person.
Yeah. So as we get into episode 10, one thing that's worth noting is there are 57 garnets in play now, and Sangmin no longer has the majority of them. My boy Jung-hyun has 29. Fresh off his two deathmatch winning streak, and Yeon still has zero somehow at Final Four.
Yeah, and Yeon would never go up from zero. Oh no, I guess he would after he beats Jung-hyun at Final Three, and then he would enter the finals as like an overwhelming leader.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous that after having literally zero garnets for the majority of the season, Yeon can somehow have the lead in garnets going into the finals, which I guess you kind of earn by having to win that Final Three deathmatch. But equally, like, if you're able to win the Final Three main match, then that's an equal test of skill, you would think. And, you know, whoever wins that deathmatch is almost guaranteed to have the lead in garnets going into the final. So maybe that needs some revision.
Yeah, although I don't know really what else they would do other than just, because the way garnets come into play in the finals is they get the leftover snow globe and then they get priority on a couple of the things, like who goes first. But other than that, they don't play that big of a role. So I guess let's get into this game. And we are going to be joined this week by four guys from Super Junior who are going to be playing in pairs. And full disclosure, I thought these guys were like a teenage boy band at first. But as I flagged up on one of them, on one of the earlier parts we've talked about, these kids are in their late 20s, in particular the fat kid, who I loved and really wish she could have played on a real season of The Genius, 29 years old.
Yeah, as we learned from G1, appearance is a no guide to age in, on The Genius.
Yeah, certainly not. So the Genius players are each going to randomly draw one of these Super Junior people to be their partner for this game, and then they're all going to get these blocks with colors. Everyone gets two cubes out of the five colors. And then they're going to basically be negotiating for points, and there are going to be entry qualifications and so forth. Pretty complicated game to actually describe now that I'm doing it. But it is a really, really fun game in general where, you know, the dealers are going to pull out a thing and they need however many colors and there are however many points to divvy up. And whoever's the master of that round gets to divvy up those points based on who has the colors. And there's like bidding and underbidding to try to get the points for whatever the color is from someone else who has that color.
Yeah, it's a game which is hard to explain. You have to kind of watch it to understand what's going on. But when you do, it's very intuitive.
So as I said, this game's going to be played, this is a negotiation game that's going to play out over a series of rounds where they're going to alternate being the master. And the way this is going to go is that the lowest combined points between the genius player and their super junior partner is going to be the loser. And whoever has the highest combined points between the genius and their super junior partner will be the winner. And that winner will get the token of life, 5 garnets, and the person, you know, their partner will get 5 grand in cash. And this is a really, as I said, a really, really fascinating game in general that I wish if they had done this at, like, maybe if they swapped this with the one they did at Final Six, the one that I loved, the Minus Auction, where there isn't such an incentive for someone like Yowon, someone forward-thinking, as is the case in this spot, to recognize that trying to win myself is not the better plan here. What the right plan is give Sangmin the win, and then there will be 3 people in the pool for deathmatch instead of just 2.
Yeah, it feels like in this game, it's very easy to both push someone to make them first, and also to make someone last if you want to. So,
oh, I was going to say, because you make a good point as to why they don't run this game earlier, I'm now realizing, is what you're saying is totally true. It is really easy to make someone else first. And when there are, you know, at Final Four, there is not an extra token of life. But earlier in the game, the person who comes in first would get an extra token of life. So this would just be tailor-made for partners to team up and give one of them the win and have the other one get the token of life if this had come any earlier than Final Four. So I will amend that previous gripe.
Sure. Yeah, so just to expand on that, so if you want to funnel points towards someone, then you effectively can, because you can arrange a deal so that they get the lion's share of the points and everyone else only gets a few. And you might think, well, in that scenario, surely the other people will just refuse the offer to make sure the deal didn't go through. And when they have a color that's in high demand and short supply, they can do that. However, if it's a color that is shared commonly between a lot of people, then that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah, like when we see Sangmin realize what's happening, when Yowon gives himself 1 point and gives Sangmin 19 points or whatever, and Sangmin goes, oh, they can make me win even if I don't want it. Do you think there was maybe even anything to Sangmin not wanting to win here and let someone else earn their spot in the final three and he'll just play his token of immortality or what?
That might have been the mindset, but if I'm Sangmin, it's hard to pass up my 7th straight victory or whatever it is now.
Yeah, true. I'm sure he wasn't like upset that he was going to win, but I think there is at least an idea, because what we see is Yowon not only recognizing that keeping Sangmin out of the deathmatch pool just increases the number of people in it, but also Sangmin can give away that token of immortality. So if Yowon propels him to victory here almost single-handedly, maybe Sangmin's going to get generous and I can find myself in the final three without having to play a deathmatch.
Sure, although keep in mind, Yoan's plan wasn't always to go with Sangmin, because at the start we see Yoan and Dunhyun teaming up to try and work together, and we said before, what could possibly go wrong when these two incredible minds meet? But as it turns out, shockingly, this doesn't go so well. The first test that they have when G1 is leader, they don't manage to get the points to each other's teammates properly, and so it's clear right from the outset that this is never going to work.
Yeah. One interesting thing about this game, I think, is that the players themselves know who their super junior partner is, but the kids don't. I feel bad calling them kids because they're older than me, but they don't know who their genius partner is, which I think adds a really interesting element. And we saw it come into play where G1 tries to like discreetly pass a note to his partner, but he does it in like the wolfiest way possible.
Yeah.
That the guy thinks this guy can't possibly be my partner.
And yeah. You see all of them just like hoping fervently that Junhyun is not their partner. And so like whichever one ends up being his partner is kind of hoping that Junhyun is pulling some weird second level bluff that he is certainly not capable of, just so that they don't have to be stuck with him.
Yeah. But I think it is a really interesting element in the game, because like when you're one of the super junior people making decisions, I don't even know if helping your partner comes into the equation for them, as apart from if their partner wins with them, they get 5,000 in cash. But I don't even know. I feel like it just adds an element of uncertainty to these people who are already in, like, a foreign environment. Like, they're not regular genius players playing at against people, or playing with people, I guess, who have been doing this for 10 weeks now. So I think that is, like, a really interesting wrinkle in the game, that the super junior people don't know with certainty who their partner is, which I really liked. And it's interesting that everyone kind of wants to be discreet about who their partner is at first, because they don't want the other genius players knowing who they can certainly give or not give points to and dictate the outcome that way.
So do you think you want your partner to have a similar color to yourself, or there be some overlap at least, or to have completely different colors? Because if you have the same colors, it's more likely that for that one color, the two of you can conspire to like set this very high price for it. But equally, if both of you have different colors, then what you can guarantee is that one of you is probably going to get some share of whatever negotiations are happening.
Yeah, well, I think if we're approaching this from the standpoint of, I want to win this game, I'm not Yohan, I'm just trying to win this game in the dark, and I have a random partner to work with, my gut is I want different colors between the both of us, because there are going to be times, say, I certainly don't want both of us having the same two colors. And I guess part of it depends on how scarce those colors are. Like, I guess I would like it if, say, me and my partner are the only people with blue. That's perfect. But anything short of that, I would rather have the variation, just so we can enter, we can meet any entry requirement.
Well, I think that was the catalyst for this short-lived Yohan and Junghyun alliance, because they are the only two blues in the field. So if they team up to set a high price for it, then in theory, that works out well for the both of them. In practice, however, you know, the two of them actually need to do it. And as we see, there's a lot of trouble with that.
Right, well, they keep underbidding each other, and then Yohan just completely changes his game plan. But yeah, you are, I mean, it is, of course, it's worth, I guess, briefly explaining. Yeah, you know, when you're one of two people with a blue cube, and everyone else, you know, there are four white cubes and four green cubes or whatever, you have a lot of bargaining power here, because they either have to give you the points they want, or they can't make a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the points you want, I should say. So I guess, yeah, there are four yellow, four white, three red, three green, and then Yohan and Junghyun have the only two blue. So they are, at least theoretically, like, at an advantage. But I would maybe question, although it's not going to be very relevant at Final Four, if this were somehow played in a larger setting where only the winner got a token of life, so there was no real motivation to collude that blatantly, I'm wondering if it might be bad to have the scarce colors, just on the principle that we always talk about of, if you're demanding a bunch of points, maybe that makes you more likely to get picked if you don't win.
I guess, although a Final Four, I would like to think that there are higher concerns about like who you want to take to the finals and who you think you have a good chance of beating, and not, I'm mad at this person for taking two of my points in round three or something.
No, what I mean is, if this was played in a bigger setting with more people, where there wasn't collusion possible.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's one of those games where when you have only four people and you have these extra super junior members coming in, it's so hard to think about how the game would play out if it was just nine genius members in episode three.
Actually, what would be really interesting, and I'm not sure how they would do this, because it would probably have to be complete information as far as the drawing partners is concerned. If they ran this at Final Eight, where the genius players, it's all genius players, and they just draw random partners, and whichever pair gets the highest total wins. They get the two tokens of life.
And the lowest point totals go to the deathmatch, right?
Yeah, that would be. Although I guess in that setting, unless they got to pick, there's no really good way to do that, because I could see a lot of like mutual interest or someone getting kind of hosed when they just wind up drawing the wrong person. Potentially, if someone draws Sangmin and then Yohan is putting a ton of pressure on them to just tank the match so they can get rid of the token of immortality. Yeah, something along those lines. There's no really good or fair way to do it. So I guess, end of the day, I'm happy the way that that this game was designed and that they brought in the guests and that they used it at Final Four. So I guess let's get into this Yohan decision. We've hit on it. I've referenced it a million times at this point, even dating back to part one. He recognizes that this is not going to go his way, and also recognizes that if Jiwon or Junghyun wins, he is automatically in the deathmatch. So he keeps taking one point for his blue in order to just stack points onto Sangmin's team and propel Sangmin to victory and at least give himself a chance to stay out of the deathmatch, which just for whatever number time it is, I love seeing this kind of like bigger picture stuff out of Yohan. And just talking through in general season two with you over these last, you know, these last however many hours we've been podcasting about it, I really have gotten a lot higher on Yohan entering season four.
See, I've almost become lower on him after we've spoken about it.
Well, that's because I like him and I'm arguing on his behalf.
Sure. It's like going over all these matches, you realize just how statistically improbable it is for someone not to win anything and to be like constantly on the losing side of every episode and every strategy. And in particular, for it to be the guy who has made a living out of being one of the best, like, quick thinking games players in the entire world, you know, that just seems so ridiculous in principle.
Well, if we think about it, he went and played laser chess against Yoon Sun. He played black and white at Final Three. He didn't go to any other death matches. So every single other round, he was vulnerable for the death match and not picked.
What do you think that says, though?
It says what I believe I have been saying for a while is they do not purely view Yoan based on what he's done in the context of the genius. They know him as the greatest StarCraft player of all time, and that is intimidating.
Is it that, or is it that they have no Garnet, and also there are other people who stand out as actively weak opposition?
There is that. There certainly is that. But that's him not getting picked. That counts as him not getting picked. And also, now that you mention it and frame it that way, maybe having zero Garnets the whole time is the best idea, maybe not in the main matches, but as far as not getting picked for the death matches, because if you're going to pick Yoan, it seems like when he has no Garnets, there's really no upside, and you could basically always be picking an easier opponent who probably has some Garnets.
Yeah, it's like you're choosing to go up against someone who, in theory, is a very good 1v1 player, and if you win, you don't even get anything in return. So it's like, what's the upside in picking him?
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, Yoan, don't mix it up. I think Yoan solved
it out.
Genius.
Yeah.
He solved it, yeah.
Well, we joke about it, but we said that, like, non-ironically, I think, in our Season 1 coverage, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. So Sangmin's team ends up winning here, of course, partially because Yoan gave him all those points. And then also, I loved it. The fat kid from Super Junior really made a mark on this episode. He was doing a bunch of, like, double dealing and had deals with the other two guys who were in contention to get some cut of the prize money.
Yeah, there's definitely a certain amount of, I'm not going to call it Napoleon syndrome, or I don't even know if that's accurate, but there's something where you can tell that he has been like the butt of the joke and maybe on the kind of like on the periphery of his group. And now he's rejoicing in the chance to just fuck everything up in the best way possible. And
yeah.
We see him towards the end making deals to split the money with every other member of Super Junior so that he can just stack up the points for himself. And it's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I really wanted to see that kid on a season of the genius, but again, it's not. Maybe he'll come be a guest on season 4 or something. It's the BB takeover on Genius 4. Okay.
So that kid's name, we should call him by his name, is Shindong, by the way. So yeah, he goes rogue towards the end. He allies with Kyuhyun, who's like the tall, lanky one of the group, as well as Sungmin. And by the way, it's so great that Sangmin's partner is called Sungmin, just for the parallelism there. But
yeah, really fun game, really fun episode, I thought. And the episode is not quite over here, Dom. As Yoan becomes the loser, he selects Junghyun to be his deathmatch opponent. And cut to a montage of Sangmin, who is about to step in, showing old clips of him talking right after he found the idol, the token of immortality, I should say, in episode 6 or 5, whatever it was, about how he really wants to use it not for, like, just to get through a round, but wants to use it in a big way. And he's really grateful towards Yoan since he was the one who helped him find the safe. And that's why he's been able to win so many games. So he uses this token of immortality to save Yoan.
I was really hoping he would save Junghyun here. And that,
of course,
unsurprisingly. And that might actually have been the smallest idea, because thinking about Yoan, if he is this fearsome 1v1 competitor, you don't want to go up against him in the finals, and so keeping him safe at Final Four when you have this one shot for someone else to take him down seems like a very risky play. Like, G1, if anyone, seems like the one person you would want to keep around here.
Right, no, I agree. This is definitely the worst possible way to use the Token of Immortality, I would say, like, by a mile, if you're Sangmin here. You probably should feel a lot more threatened by Yoan than either of G1 or Junghyun, but nonetheless, like, I think this move in particular adds almost like a whole new dimension to Sangmin, who we've always viewed as like this obviously mega super elite gamer, maybe even the greatest player in the history of reality TV. I suppose we'll get there. But at this point, when he has what I would say is a very clear-cut decision, as far as just strategic ideas, is the only person not to use it on is Yoan. But he does feel some kind of like obligation and some kind of like honor-bound duty to save Yoan here after all that he's done for him. And maybe this is Sangmin once again just being a big showman and recognizing this is a great uplifting story. But it is, I'm sure he recognized the hit to his general win equity that would come with giving Yoan this token of immortality. And I think while it is not a good strategic move, there was a lot more going into that decision than just what is a good strategic move.
For sure. It makes you wonder, had Sangmin been born and raised in the West, how different his outlook would be? That's kind of an absurd hypothetical because so much else would change about him if that was the case. But even so, like, if you put Sangmin in a season of like Big Brother US, or you took one of the greats from one of the American shows and put them on The Genius, just to see that that clash of cultures almost play out would be kind of fascinating, I think.
I think it would be really funny. I'm guessing Sangmin would be one of the best Big Brother players of all time, even when he doesn't speak English. And I think it would be to put like Will or put, I think, actually, honestly, just to quickly, this is something we will talk about in more detail way down the line when we get a chance to talk more generally. I have said if they ever did an American version of The Genius, I think my number one pick would be Dan Giesling out of the reality contestants. Just because I think if you put Dan in Korea, he would be a lot like Sangmin, where it is constant trying to excel in the games. But I think if Dan was Korean, he would have that kind of like, I think he thinks enough of himself and of the games. And I don't mean that in like a mean way. I mean, which is rare when I'm talking about Dan. But like, I think he has enough like respect for his environment. And if he was in that kind of Korean culture, I think he would be capable of that. I'm not so sure about like Boston Rob. I don't think you could pay Boston Rob enough to give Yoan the token of immortality here. I think it would be so foreign to him, both literally and in the larger sense, the idea of not always doing whatever is best for your general win equity. I don't know, but it is certainly an interesting idea. Okay, so we are going to be playing some more Indian Hold'em here. It's Junghyun versus Jiwon, and the Garnet disparity, this is the one where I referenced it earlier. It's such a ridiculous Garnet disparity that Sangmin outright just gives Jiwon 10 Garnets to buy in with to make it at least like competitive. It's really like, it is really weird. Like, as much as I do love season 2, the one big issue I think I would have with it, much more so than I would have with what happened in episode 6 with the ID, is the game design, particularly I think God's Judgment, really just fucked up the Garnets for the entire back half of the season. When typically we like to see them a bit more balanced, I should say. Nonetheless, let's move on to the Indian Hold'em match here. And I don't have a ton to say as far as the specifics. I think it is worth getting into briefly. The first hand is a 10 against another 10. So, of course, Junghyun overbets big time to force a fold, thinking he's being super clever and trying to get a 10 to fold. Meanwhile, of course, Jiwon's going to fold because he's facing a 10. And it really does go to show just how much variance there is in these games, because the opposite thing would have happened if Jiwon had just been the first one to bet. Junghyun would have folded. Or Jiwon may have just folded outright, so who knows. But it's at least far more likely that it would have gone the other way just based on who got to go first. I guess one thing that is worth getting into a little bit is just the first hand. I think it's interesting they both got dealt 10s, so they both had the nuts, and Junghyun overbets to like be clever and try to force Jiwon into folding a 10. But meanwhile, little does he know that he actually has a 10 himself, and Jiwon's obviously going to fold against that. But this is a great example of just how much variance there is here, because now Jiwon has to give Junghyun 10 chips, where in all likelihood, if Jiwon had been just the person who got to bet first that turn, Junghyun would be sending over 10 chips. That's a 20-chip swing just based on who got to go first.
Yeah, although based on this profile that we've built up of Junghyun over 10 episodes now, he doesn't strike you as the type who would make that kind of very aggressive overbet in those circumstances. So to see him do it is surprising, and I think quite a good play.
It is a good play. You really do want to be putting the pressure on there when the reward is so big, and when you know that basically, if you have a 7 or higher, there's pretty much no way he's going to call there, right? Maybe, you never know, I guess, with Jiwon.
Well, I think if you look at the dynamic with these two players, I wouldn't say that Jiwon like dislikes Junghyun or anything. They seem to get along fairly well, but I wouldn't say he respects him that much as an opponent. And so when he, on the first hand of the game, is making this massive overbet in complete defiance of any expectations that you had about him, you're going to think that you had like a 1 or a 2 the vast majority of the time. So even if you see a middling number like a 5 or a 6, you're going to have a very hard time calling that off there.
Well, my thought would be, especially after seeing seeing Jiwon do this in his Indian poker match against Jinho, where the first hand Jinho gets the nut low, the one where they both had the nut low and chopped, And as Jinho kind of goes into the tank before he calls, G1's saying, come on, let's just end this quickly. Where I think it is, I think you're probably being tempted to give them a bit more credit than they're maybe due when it comes to Indian poker. I think they're both, at least in my mind, the classic kind of like overcompensating, weak means strong, strong means weak kind of players.
That's true. And I think a lot of this is just based on instinct and what they feel is going to be the right play, as opposed to like thinking it through and working it out. But even so, like we saw Junghyun in the previous game, and this is me being serious about him for a moment. Like we've seen him now in two games, which are based around kind of betting and the psychology around betting and reading your opponent and actually going through that process pretty well. So, you know, I think there's enough evidence there to give him some credit for it.
But this is, he won three death matches, right?
Yeah, he won three and then lost to Yoan in Black versus White, which you can say that was a complete rout by Yoan, just demolishing him, like going up 4-0 to start. But that's against Yoan, who we said has a certain affinity for these games. And Junghyun, in his previous three death matches, did pretty well the whole time. So, you know, credit where credit's due, I think.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair to say that Yoan has an affinity for one-on-one games of strategy. I think that is, at this point in time, a safe statement to make. Okay, so I guess the way this ends up playing out is, as is often going to be the case in Indian poker, they both, it's the nut low versus the second nut low, and the person with the second nut low ends up calling it off, even when they're facing a person who clearly is only going to be going all in against the nut low.
So there's one interesting hand here that I think is worth touching on quickly. The two community cards on the board are a 1 and a 10. Junghyun 3 bets and G1 4 bets shoves. And Junghyun folds against G1 straight. And so G1 takes a slight lead but then ends up folding back to even fairly quickly. I thought that hand was, I guess, in isolation it doesn't really mean too much. But taken in context of the wider match and the experience that we and other people have with poker in general, I thought that hand was just quite interesting to like see and then analyze.
Well, this is what I'm guessing. Now that we bring up that hand and just thinking back to his overbet the first hand, I'm guessing his idea there was, when at all possible, try to take advantage of the 10-chip penalty for folding a pair or a 10 or better. So I think that's what kind of induced the 3-bet is, if I can get him to fold a straight, that's going to be a complete game changer.
Sure, and then G1 4-bet shoving there, I guess he felt that he was committed or that it would look so strong that there's no way Junghyun could call unless he saw an exceptionally weak hand.
I mean, there's no way that this is why I almost kind of, in thinking about it a little bit, I almost like just calling there if I'm G1, even when I'm facing the nut low, because Junghyun will only be calling if it's a chop, if I have the nut low as well. And then it's just a coin flip. Yeah. And you're going to win the hand. You're going to win the same number of chips anyway when you have the same total. So you might as well reduce the variance if you're the better player.
Yeah, and then there's a hand shortly after that where there's a 7 and a 9 on the board, and Junghyun 3-bet shoves again against G1's 1. So obviously you might think, well, G1 has a weak hand. I'm going to try and get him to commit money to the pot. But taken in light of the hand that we just discussed and then the other hands in the match, then maybe that doesn't look so obvious to G1 there, but G1 ends up folding regardless.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a very vivid recollection of this death match, despite both of these competitors being two of the sharpest minds that have ever graced the main hall of the genius floor.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So the way this ends is, the way Indian poker or Indian hold'em is often going to end, which is the nut low against the second nut low, where the nut low just can't get away from it. Because there's too much in the pot. And this ends up being, you know, you could probably switch the cards and it would go the other way. But in this case, G1 calls it off against a 2, and he, of course, has a 1, and that is it.
Yeah, and we don't see here the kind of card counting strategy that Yoan and other people have employed in games like this.
Shocking.
Junghyun doesn't even need it. He's going to just demolish G1 anyway.
Yeah, okay, we'll hold off on parting thoughts on Junghyun until the end of next round, but let's get into parting thoughts on G1 here. Because, like I think I said earlier, the more I'm really thinking about it, I didn't even recognize this while rewatching, but the more just in talking about it, the more I really did appreciate what G1 brought to the season. Yeah, I will say that the first time I was watching it, and I felt similarly about Junghyun, and these are not the only two people I felt this way about. There are oftentimes I get kind of bummed out when people I deem like not exactly genius caliber players compared to some of the other people from the season make it this deep into the season. But I actually really at the end of the day, am okay. I think even... hang on.
I know what you're about to say, and don't even start.
Okay. I'm trying to find the right way to say it, but okay. I guess we'll say that. Give me some parting thoughts on G1.
Okay, well, no. As I said, I think G1 is like a fun minor character who... On your first viewing, yeah, you're not really rooting for him and he doesn't really stand out, but you come to appreciate him afterwards for those small moments of comedy that he brings. And also his impeccable fashion sense. Like, not just the fucking snob shirt, but also the Cleveland Cavaliers baseball cap, which I don't think he even knows what the Cleveland Cavaliers are, much like I don't. So the fact that he's wearing a baseball cap is... It's kind of like in season 3, and this isn't really spoilerous, but where the set just contains like these random American motifs that anyone who's actually from America would just be completely bepuzzled as to why they're there. And it's kind of the same thing with that.
Well, we have Barack Obama here.
Yeah, well, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, and incidentally, while you may not know of the Cleveland Cavaliers, we've already talked about one of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's LeBron James on one of our earlier podcasts. His team is actually the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, G1 was some solid American sports gear. His Spurs hat, his Oakland Athletics hat in the season premiere, really on point stuff. I'm not going to say it was tough to see G1 go, and I'm really glad that I was able to get out of talking myself into a hole about Junghyun this early. All right, so let's get into episode 11. We only have 3 people left now here. And in this game, we're going to have some more returning players. That's right. Jinho, Doohee, and Daye are back to play as a team against a team of these final 3. However, within the Genius Players team, they all have individual goals. So it's really not so much a team effort, as we'll see play out.
Yeah, I always wonder how they decide who these returning guests are, because Jinho is obvious, I think. Doohee, you can understand, especially based on what happened to him in episode 6. But Daye, I mean, I think was fine for the time she was there, and I was hoping that she would be there for longer. But like, why her as opposed to any of the others?
That's a good question, but I mean, why not her as opposed to any of the others, I suppose?
And she actually puts in a pretty good performance here, I think, especially towards the end, realizing that Sangmin has got all that he needs from the returning player team and might try to double-cross them now.
That's certainly a healthy impulse when you're dealing with Sangmin. Okay, so the elevator game, as Dom calls it, snakes and ladders, whatever the fuck that is. everyone's going to get a little buzzer, probably designed by Doohee, where they either press 0 or 1, that's how many spaces their team piece is going to move. And the Genius players are going to draft spots on this board laid out of numbers 1 through 100. And the team that gets to number 100 or beyond first is the winner. And if the guests win... all 10 of the eliminated players from the Genius thus far will each get $2,000. And if the players win, 20 garnets are going into the prize pool.
Sure. And some people here, Junghyun included, want to play as a team. So Junghyun starts talking about how he wants to get the team prize and the 3 Genius players should work in the spirit of perfect camaraderie. And of course, the fabled Junghyun music starts playing in the background. And then there's this cut to Yeoan calling him out as the music like builds to this crescendo. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, there was I think it was early on in the episode, and this is probably what you're talking about, where he like tries to give this inspiring speech, and they both play along, and then it cuts to like Sangmin sarcastically looking at the camera, like what the fuck's this guy talking about, and then it cuts to Yeoan looking at the camera, like what's this guy talking about? Yeah, really solid stuff. I mentioned that they're going to draft spots, and that's how the individual winner of this game is going to be determined among the Genius players. Anytime one of the team pieces lands on whatever number, if anyone has drafted that number, that person will get the point. So we have these elevators going up and down, which is going to be a big factor as well in the draft strategy. And then I also really liked Yeoan's idea of just going for high numbers because they're going to get there quickly.
Yeah, and I think the obvious idea there is to place your markers on the squares with the most connecting nodes, if you like. So I think there are a few squares where there's an elevator going out to it and an elevator, or a lift rather, if you want to be precise, going down to it. And so those squares in theory are going to have a lot more activity on them than just your ordinary square.
Right, and it is worth noting, you can place, you can draft a spot that is a destination of an elevator, but you cannot draft an elevator spot itself.
Sure, yeah. So are there any maybe more subtle reasons why you might want to pick a certain square? Like, let's say towards the end, if you think, well, if someone on our team is working with the other team, then their pieces are more likely to end up in this configuration somehow, and so I want my pieces on certain squares.
My thought, I think, would be we're going to get moving up there pretty quickly. We're not going to be like having any kind of substantial drops that I'm going to be anticipating, just all things being equal. So I think, and especially when you look at the board, I'm sure plenty of people won't remember it, but in the top right corner of the board, there was like this little circular thing that a lot of people, I think, could expect to be dropping down on the highest column, like the last place to knock someone off before they're about to win. The end of that elevator is where I want to be, and like the spots right near that, because I feel like that's going to be some hot real estate.
Right, you know that the teams are going to have to go through that final pass at least once or twice, probably even more. And so if you can just get like four or five pieces in a row, you can be racking up the points towards the end.
Right. I think the highest priority draft spots are right near the destination of the higher up elevators that go down. Yeah, generally, I think you're just burning money putting any of your tokens on anything below. Honestly, I don't think I would go below like 65 if I could help it. Unless there was some like crazy, based on like whatever the board texture was for the elevators, maybe that would change if there was like some crazy elevator numbers loophole or whatever, where it just get like some kind of like hamster wheel that just keeps going back and forth. But barring anything like that, I think the canopy is where you want to be.
I guess my concern there is you're guaranteeing that you will have very few points when the pieces reach that stage. And so the other people on your team and also on the other team know that you have an interest in the pieces being knocked down a few times and having to keep going round and around. So you're going to try and engineer that outcome however you can so they can maybe anticipate that and play around it.
Well, I think the other idea is when they start drafting lower spots, it becomes in other people's interest to move up faster, which is something you can't play around when I have the high spots. It's not like you're going to keep just fucking around in the 40s. Yeah. So that would be my thought, at least. Like, yeah, sure, there is. And in particular, like, if collusion's going to be a factor, or if, you know, if just by just sheer coincidence, someone gets a bunch of points and then the guests feel like it's not even worth trying to help you for whatever reason because you're so far behind by the time it even gets to, like, the 70s or whatever. But I do still, I don't think it's even debatable that the higher numbers are going to generally have more expected hits.
Yeah, so you think about the different incentives that the teams face here. The Genius Players team, each player on that team wants to win, and that player winning is going to be at odds with any other player winning, obviously, and so they're working across purposes, whereas the Returning Players team, they're not playing for themselves individually, they're playing for this group outcome, so they can all work in harmony together, and so any one player on the Genius team has a lot to gain by selling out on that team to work with the Genius team so that they can get the token of life and the Genius team can get the money.
Are you telling me that this is a game that Sangman won? Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And this is something we talked about earlier in this podcast, but I think this is another spot where it really comes into play in a big way is, in all likelihood, this game is quite often going to come down to, if it's being played by good players, the guests are really going to be picking the winner. Because I think developing some kind of code is a pretty natural progression if you're actually trying to work with the other team. And so I think Sangman is obviously a master, probably the master of selling out his own team and you know, other teams wanting to work with him. Like, it's good on Sangman that the people from earlier in the season want to be helping him in particular. And, you know, this probably, apart from Jinho, didn't have even much to do with season one. But I do think that is going to be the deciding factor, and I think this was over before it even started.
Yeah, and that reveal that we get midway through the episode that, Sangman was helping the returning players all along, that doesn't come as a surprise at all at this stage. Right. And although the way he did it seemed very obvious, I guess, where like the signal to move once is him hitting his head, and the signal to move twice or something is him like breakdancing around the room. Like, eventually you would wise up that something is going on here.
Every time he pulls out a piece of cardboard to do tricks on, they miraculously put two. Yeah, no, they were very, very over-the-top kind of signals to the other team. I guess in that sense, it's I don't want them to miss it. But it seems like you could do something a little more discreet, right?
You would think so, yeah. I mean, it's...
Like coughing. No one's ever going to pick up on coughing.
Yeah. Did you hear about the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire crisis in the UK?
No, I didn't. What is it?
there was this big scandal like years and years ago because one of the people who won the £1 million on the show, he had this guy and his wife sitting in the audience coughing to give the answers because they'd acquired them somehow. And so, you know, at the time, they didn't think anything of it. But then when the when production was rewatching the tapes, they realized that coincidentally, like, he would arrive at the correct answer after hesitating and clearly not knowing it after the guy in the audience had been coughing. And so, you know, obviously this big scandal developed. So I don't know how obvious that would be in retrospect, but something to think about.
Well, I think the more obvious thing, particularly for Johan, because the way this went down is Sangmin got a huge lead early when no one else was getting any points. And Johan, being a poker player, has got to understand the value of position. And for whatever reason, he kept being okay with the genius players putting their answers in first. And miraculously, the guests would always be able to play around it.
Yeah, I had no idea what Johan was up to in this episode. And that's the one big thing which you would expect him to understand, which is, you know, if you get to act last, even if you're not really able to interpret the information that you get from that, the fact that other people don't get to use your actions as information themselves is going to be crucial. So,
right. You
know, I would expect at least one person on the Genius team, maybe not Jung-hyun, as sad as it is to say, but certainly Yeoban, to pick up on that and act accordingly. So
yeah.
I would want to be the last person to act in my team, and I would want my team to be the second team to act.
That's what I was going to say, is honestly, if I'm Yeoban and we keep going first, I would start wondering to myself, why isn't Sangmin mad that we keep going first?
Right, and if somehow we do end up going first, I'm saying to Sangmin, look, there's something suspicious going on here, so just give me your pad and I will enter your thing for you, just so we can be sure that the things are going to plan here.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was Sangmin was giving them their honest information and telling the other team what he wanted them to hit. It would be... The problem for Yeoban was the other team knew what Sangmin needed, and Yeoban would have to be manipulating the other team's controllers to do anything about it. But yeah, same idea, certainly. The first time I was watching it, I thought it was just part of the rules that the genius players had to go first. Yeah, but anyway, so this, a very entertaining episode. Like you said, it's not the biggest surprise in the world at this point that, hey, shocking news that's going to shock everyone. Sangmin sold out his team and had some clever trick the whole time. So Sangmin is going to be the first of our finalists, and the 20,000 is going to the other people. However, the person who gets eliminated this week will get nothing and will be the biggest loser of the season, unequivocally.
You're just trying to jab the knife in, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay. So we, of course, just by default have Yeoban and Jung-hyun here playing black and white. And we've touched on this already, but this is just an absolute curb stomping by Yeoban, just knowing Jung-hyun's tendencies and being as sharp of a gamer as he is. Jung-hyun had zero... Spencer has zero chance to win this game. Yeah, as does Jung-hyun. Anyway, any thoughts on this? Because I know we've already touched on it quite a bit, but this was really, really impressive stuff, I thought. Like, I know it's not the most complicated game in the world, but it was really cool to see Yeoban just take it to the next level and really demonstrate that.
Yeah, and Yeoban kind of does his thing quietly, and I didn't know what he was like back in his StarCraft days, if he was like a big kind of trash talker or anything, but he doesn't hype himself up. He's not saying, oh, I cleverly outwitted Jung-hyun or anything, and in general, people on the Genius aren't really privy to doing that, but Yeoban in particular just kind of does his thing and just like dismantles Jung-hyun.
Yeah, and just to kind of like get into the basic logic behind Yeoban's tactics here, I think essentially like when he knows that they being Jung-hyun and whoever the hell he played this against earlier, and it's been too long already for me, when he knows that they're always saving their bigger tiles for the end, it's not really worth it to save your own bigger tiles for the end, right? Because they're just in all likelihood going to be draws. Like it's all going to even out in the long run there. However, you can use those big tiles early and rack up a ton of points.
Right, and you will have worse tiles then towards the end, but you only need one or two of those matchups towards the end to go your way, so it doesn't really matter. So, like, you might have your six or your seven tile left over, and if you can deploy that at the right time, then you can just lock the game up there and then.
Right, or if your opponent just has his zero or his or her zero or one left over, by the time it gets into the later rounds, it's going to just be mathematically over because they have to use it at some point. Yeah, which we saw was the case here. It was actually over a couple of rounds before it officially ended because Jung-hyun still had his zero and his one left. So, Dominic, the time has come. Parting thoughts on Jung-hyun.
I'll let you start here before I get into that.
I don't think anyone listening at all wants me to start right now.
Sure. All right, so Drinking, I was going to say he's me in 20 years, but realistically, he's just me right now. Like that music that plays whenever he's bumbling around trying to understand the situation or be accepted by anyone, I feel like if there was a soundtrack to my life, that would make up a good like 85 or 90% of it. I thought he was a sympathetic character most of the time, but also one that you could kind of poke fun at or enjoy what was happening to him and the fact that he just couldn't seem to make anything happen and then was randomly winning games, even though nobody, including himself, really expected to. Just a completely underrated comic presence in common with a lot of people on the season, I think, but Jung-hyun in particular just really delivers every single time he's on the screen, and he doesn't even intend to. He's not trying to be this big character or anything. He just, that's who he is, and that's why he's so lovable and so weird and so fantastic.
Yeah, I like, you do make compelling points, and I definitely did not give Jung-hyun enough appreciation my first time around by any stretch. Like, I was pretty actively disappointed that he made it to the final three just by virtue of he's taking up a spot that could have gone to someone else. But by, you know, after we both had finished season two, it almost blew my mind to find out that you were so in love with this dude. I feel like you've almost, like, you haven't fully converted me by any means. I think, like, he's not atrocious. He still has some equity to win a season of The Genius. Like, he clearly can rub a couple brain cells together, to say the least. But I certainly don't think he's a good genius player by any stretch. I think he's one of the biggest underdogs in the All-Stars field. I don't think that's even controversial. But you are absolutely right that every scene that he's in is hilarious. And I also think not only does he bring it, I also feel like it's made better by the fact that he seems to be okay with it. Like, he seems to be aware of what role he's playing and be fine. Like, when he enters in the finals that we'll get to momentarily, he's the first one to get to come in, and he talks about that music. He's like, why is it every time I'm on the screen, they're always playing this music? They're probably playing it right now.
And of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course they are. But yeah, I certainly, while not probably one of my MVPs of the season, absolutely came around quite a bit on Jung-hyun. And I'll say I'm happy to see him back for All-Stars. I was surprised that he was going to be back there, but I'm happy to see him back.
Yeah, maybe he's always going to be like a cult classic, but I'm okay with that. And if there are other Jung-hyun fans out there, then it's good to know that I have some kindred spirits. I think he falls into that tradition of like big brother third placers who no one really respects, but end up playing some defining role in the season anyway. So, like, Jung-hyun could be the Sheila Kennedy of The Genius, just like someone who you never really fully understand how they're even still there or who they are, but somehow they are, and they just kind of keep scratching and clawing their way to the end, at which point they kind of fall at the final hurdle.
Yeah, and their kids are super embarrassed by them, I would imagine.
Naturally, yeah.
Yeah. So, good. By the way, Jung-hyun going to be coming back, and not only coming back in style based on the season four promotional meeting, like press conference that they had for season four. He wore the dopest suit easily.
It was like great. Yeah.
Vertical stripes, amazing black and white suit. Everyone else looked like shit by comparison.
He looked like some kind of cruise ship entertainer. It was unnerving.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, he looked like Beetlejuice. He was basically wearing a Beetlejuice suit. Okay, Dom, the time has come. It is the finals. We have Sangmin against Yeowon. Certainly a matchup I was really excited for. I assume you were rooting for Sangmin?
Yeah, it's hard not to root for Yeowon to win and tie Jinho in that regard, but equally, Yeowon coming second while Jinho has already won would be like the perfect bookend to their StarCraft career. So, I'm perfectly happy with either outcome here.
Yeah, I was definitely rooting for Sangmin just because the first time I watched this, I just spent like a solid 2 weeks falling in love with Sangmin, and I really wanted him to convert here. But yet again, much like I was rooting for Jinho but would have been totally happy with Kyungran winning, while I probably wouldn't have been totally happy with this in the moment, certainly upon further review, I would have been, like, I think Yeowon, as we've touched on, Yeowon is the favorite entering these. He's a professional gambler who is the most dominant StarCraft player of all time.
Right, and that's why I think Sangmin's decision to keep him around at Final Four and give him a free pass essentially to the Final Three is, obviously it didn't end up backfiring on him, but it easily could have done. And if so, we might be looking at Sangmin as someone who did something which was understandable in the context of The Genius, just given the metagame and the prevailing like cultural attitudes, but which in terms of just his equity of winning the game was a massive blunder.
Oh, I'm sure, listen, These were very high variance games, and I'm guessing if they go the other way, it's pretty likely, and this is unfair of us, that we're sitting here berating Sangmin for using that token of immortality on Yoan.
Sure, but you look at the games that they had. Truth Detector, so the password game, was very heavily advantaged to the person who went first and who had the items that gave you a benefit there. And then Quattro was essentially just flipping a coin to see who won. And we'll get onto that certainly in due course. And then the one game that was really skill-based, I would say, Indian Hold'em, Yoan just destroyed Sangmin at. So, and had the other games been more evenly balanced, Yoan could very easily be our winner now.
Yeah, I mean, this is not even close, I would imagine, to the most prize money Yoan has been playing for in like a high-stakes, heads-up environment. Like, he's played under enormous pressure. StarCraft, at least probably 10, 15 years ago, was the biggest thing. Like, South Korea was the hub of the world for StarCraft.
Yeah, and Yoan being a professional StarCraft player, like the best in the world, was equivalent to, you know, being the best soccer player in the world. Or I would say American football, but no one watches that outside of America, so might be a bad example. But regardless, like, this was a seriously big thing. So Yoan was a legitimate celebrity, which, again, it seems so strange given just the appearance that he gives off to us as people who are coming in without any knowledge of that. But yeah, he is used to being in the spotlight and having to perform under a lot of pressure, and he effectively does that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think if these are three games like you've highlighted, Indian Hold'em is really the only game that qualifies as like a skill game, I would say, when passcode should be pretty straightforward if they're thinking about it, although we do see them take some very weird lines in playing passcode. But I think if these are like three games that are comparable to like laser chess, I think Yoan is a huge favorite to beat Sangmin here. Anyway, but that is of course not what we're going to see. So let's talk, before we get into the games, let's talk about how these snow globe advantages get split up here. Run down this list for me, because I think this is really interesting.
Okay, so Sangmin gets Yunkyul, Doohee, Jinho, Jiwon, Junghyun, and Yuyong. And Yoan gets Huijong, Jaekyung, Daye, Yunsun, and Hongchul. So immediately the first thing that stands out there is four of the first five boots voted for Yoan.
Yeah, and everyone who made it to the back half of the season voted for Sangmin, minus Hongchul.
Right, and even Hongchul, I don't think, was angry at Sangmin over anything. It was just he wanted to vote for Yoan to kind of keep it interesting. And so had it been just a straight-up jury vote of the contestants who made the middle portion of the game, as you see in Western shows, then Sangmin would win convincingly, it seems.
I don't know about that. We saw at least Junghyun really went into the tank and asked if he could give it to neither of them. And later in like this season 4 promo video, it's not a spoiler alert if you've seen season 2. And I'm guessing if you haven't seen season 2, you've been pretty heavily spoiled if you've made it this far. Junghyun said he's still extremely bitter about the way that he went out. And I don't know how much of that is in jest, but I don't think it's necessarily the case, especially when oftentimes when it gets down to the end, the players seem to want to even it out so the advantages get split evenly.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily the case that Sangmin blows out Yoan in a jury vote.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Junghyun's comment there was more regarding his general treatment in season 2, where he was constantly, you know, being excluded from things and having to work and not really feeling respected, as opposed to one person in particular mistreating him.
Okay, that's definitely possible. But I think it is certainly very interesting, maybe just a coincidence, but it seems like too much to be a coincidence that all of the early people essentially voted for Yoan and all of the late people voted for Sangmin.
What do you think of Jinho voting for Sangmin? Because you can obviously understand it, like it clearly makes sense, but equally you might expect that long-standing rivalry or relationship to maybe amount to something there. I don't know.
Well, I think there is certainly, it wouldn't have shocked me for Jinho to give it to Yoan. They do seem to be on fine terms, at least these days. And I think there is like a mutual respect between the two, certainly. Jinho's reasoning that he gave when he was putting it down on Sangmin's plate was something that really stood out to me, and I think is the legitimate reason that he gave it to him. Jinho, the winner of season 1, I think takes a lot of pride in the reputation of the show and maintaining that. And when he put the globe down on Sangmin's thing, he said, I think Sangmin has been the most genius-like.
Which he had, in fairness. And also, protecting his own reputation from being equaled by Yoan again.
It would be, I mean, how bad can Jinho run to win a season of The Genius and then give, like, He probably would trade never having been on The Genius to avoid him winning and then Yohan winning.
Yeah. If Yohan somehow wins season four after having coming second and therefore like surpassing Jinho's overall record, then I don't know how Jinho's going to feel about that.
Yeah, and like get barely more prize money than Jinho got for season one. Yeah. Okay. So I guess let's get into the games. And the games, as you said, are Quattro, Indian Hold'em, and this new game called Truth Detector, which is essentially a game called Passcode. And that one's definitely getting played second. Now, Yohan got the advantage to pick which one they're going to start with. I think it makes sense. He is, in fairness, a professional poker player. He's going to start with Indian Hold'em here. Very strong strategic idea. I think it is huge to be the one who goes up 1-0. So as we highlighted in our Season 1 podcast, the first game selection item can be absolutely massive in at least psychologically swinging the way the result ends up going. Now, they both are going to get 20 chips to start here, and they both get items that give them a bonus 5 chips, so they're both at 25. Sangmin has the copier item. He chooses to copy this bonus 5 chips thing just to make it 30 against 25. This seemed crazy to me. It seems like there's probably not going to come another time where you have a worse item to copy that's going to give you that little of an advantage. Whereas if you consider if he saves that for passcode and can copy the extra turn item, 2 extra turns is essentially the victory in passcode.
I can understand if you think that Yohan is going to have an advantage in Indian poker and so you want to even the playing field a bit there, but I don't think 5 chips is going to be sufficient to overcome Yohan's like years of experience and understanding of the game there.
Right. I like, if it was a bonus 10 chips and you could put it to 40 against 30, maybe I would copy that. But 30 against 25 is not enough of an advantage against Yohan to justify using the copier item, in my opinion. Just what you can generally expect from a general item. I think you can reasonably expect to have a more powerful item to copy later.
Yeah, and what could easily happen here, and in fact it does, is you waste your copier item on a marginal advantage in this game, you end up losing this game anyway, and then going into one of the other two games, there is a big advantage there that you want to copy, but now you can't because you wasted it earlier.
Yeah, I think perhaps Sangmin was thinking to himself, well, fuck, I'm playing Indian Hold'em against Yohan. First of all, I'll take any advantage I can get, and second of all, I want to at least use this copier item, because if it turns out that I don't have any good items for the next game, and then I lose without ever at least having given myself a chance to copy something, that's going to suck.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, the peanut gallery of the other contestants do seem to agree here. And to a man or to a woman, they seem to think that using it here was a waste.
Yeah, so I think I would definitely agree with that. So we get into Indian Hold'em, and it is fun here getting to see Yohan playing some Indian Hold'em. And I think he has the absolutely right idea, and that probably comes as no shock given his profession. But he's, his general philosophy is, as long as it's not too much, I'm just going to call everything. Just keep the pot small when you don't know with certainty yet how the cards are going to be, like what the count is to put it in blackjack terms, because card counting is obviously going to be huge for Yohan here. So let some time pass, get more knowledge about what's going to be left in the deck, and then play a big pot when you know you have a big advantage. But it's senseless. Like when we talk about, I remember in season one, there was just so much completely senseless three betting. And it's just the absolutely worst idea for no real reason to reopen the action and let your opponent potentially put you to a tough decision.
Yeah, and so often we see players just toss another chip or two in without seemingly any thought, just because they feel like their situation is good and they ought to put more chips in, even though it doesn't really make any sense.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's the case a lot of the times where we have these nut low versus second nut low all-ins, where the people think to themselves, well, shit, I'm already in for so much on this pot, and he has the second nut low, when in reality the thought should be, he's never ever jamming all in on me here without me having the nut low, and thus I cannot possibly call. So Yohan ends up just systematically destroying him here. Sangmin, not a very good poker player, I'm going to say. Like, his sizing is wrong, his ideas seem just bad. I know a lot of poker is kind of counterintuitive, but this is not a game that's going to get Sangmin, like, where his intuition can really carry him when his own card is on his fucking forehead.
Yeah, I think Sangmin works best in these large open games where he can go from person to person, see what they're thinking, and find the one weakness to exploit. But in this game, where it's just a battle of wits, heads up against one other person, and there's no way out, there's no way you can betray your own team for some personal advantage, Sangmin is just playing as anyone else would have to, and he doesn't seem overly good at it, like you say.
Now that I'm thinking about it, because we're going to talk about passcode 2, and I think the dumbest thing you can do is select a year, pick your number based on a year in the 1900s, because it's going to be something people would think of. Anyway, based on his season 1 loss to Kyungran, based on Indian Hold'em, based on his passcode selection, and Quattro just being a coin flip essentially, Sangwin is a bad one-on-one player, I'm going to say. And now I'm really starting to reevaluate how much success he might have in season 4 if he ever actually has to go to a deathmatch.
I'm going
to
call it now. If he goes to a deathmatch early, he could be gone. And that could be like the big upset of the early episodes. And equally, I could see him getting to the finals again and losing. Just because whoever his finals opponent is going to be, maybe the games are better, or maybe it is someone like Yoan, but this time they don't have things slanted against them. You know, that could quite easily be his fate there.
Right, and I think it is interesting, like, Sangmin and Jinho are obviously, like, the two stars of the franchise to this point, and he's not playing against Jinho, but he is playing against Yoan, which is, like, the next best thing, or some would say the better thing to Jinho, where it is, like, a showdown of, in this one-on-one environment, Yoan, and I would say Jinho's the same way, like, the very analytical kind of process, whereas Sangmin, don't get me wrong at all, he is among the greatest players who has ever played any reality game. But when it comes to that, when it's not something where he can use his social skills or his intuition, he's going to struggle, it seems. And the way this is going to end here, Dom, is, you know, as I said, as a lot of Indian poker games and Hold'em games are going to end, Yoan picks up a 2 against Sangmin's 1. It's the nut low against the second nut low on a paired board. Sangmin, you know, there's some raising, some re-raising. Sangmin calls off his last 6 chips. Even though, you know, he openly says, I know I'm beat. Yoan wouldn't do this unless this is a sure thing, but he calls it off anyway. And just to be a super nit, no, absolutely no reason to call it off there when you are guaranteeing yourself to go down 1-0, when at least if you have 6 chips, you can get lucky and come back. It's just so crippling to get down 1-0, especially when you're just throwing away whatever equity you have. Anyway, Yoan now up 1-0, and yet another death match just destroyed by Yoan, essentially. So that is going to be 1-0 Yoan entering game 2. Anything else on Indian Hold'em before we get moving?
The only thing to point out here is Junghyun, while he's sitting in the room with all the others, he has like this superstition about the way that the deck is being shuffled, and he like volunteers that Sangmin should have giri'd the deck, which is like where you cut it before it gets finalized or something. So absolutely no basis in statistical reality whatsoever. It's just Junghyun being Junghyun.
Yeah, one of the things that I've probably said 1,000 times over the poker table is they're all random cards. If they've been shuffled, it doesn't matter how many times you cut them. If someone gets dealt the wrong card, they're all random cards as long as they're face down. Okay, so let's move on now. We are playing Truth Detector, which is essentially passcode. Each of them is going to create their own 4-digit kind of like password, and they're going to alternate, basically 20 questions style, and the first person to figure out the other person's passcode is the winner. Yoan gets the first turn selection item, which is big, because going first, obviously, the more turns you can get in, the better. But Sangmin also gets the double turn item, which the copier item would come in quite handy for, but it is gone already. So, but it essentially balances out. Like, Yoan will get to go first, but Sangmin will get 2 turns. Yeah. So the level 1, when you're thinking about what number to create here, Dom, at least for me, my thought was I want to use 4 different numbers because probably my opponent is going to ask if there are any repeating numbers. But now that I'm thinking, and that's, you know, if there are, that's going to narrow my range quite a bit. But if you think about it, say you say yes, that there are repeating numbers, I feel like it's then going to take quite a few questions to get that right. So the more I actually put thought into this, I actually almost really like making one of my numbers repeat.
Well, the binary search process, which I believe is the proven fastest way to get the right answer here, does not involve asking the question of whether there are repeating numbers. And so I feel like if you do repeat it, then your opponent might not be expecting you to repeat it, and so that adds maybe another layer to their confusion.
That's what I'm saying is, no one's going to ever expect someone else to include a repeating number just based on the like level 1 fear of what if they ask if I have a repeating number, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. And what Dom is talking about is the idea where, especially if you're the first person to go, this is 100% the game plan, you just say, so there are 10,000 possible numbers, 0000 through 9999, is your number over or under, or is your number over 5,000? And if they say yes, your next question is it over 7,500? If they say yes, it's whatever. I can't even do the math on that. That's far too complicated for me for the next step in that process. But so you just cut all possibilities in half every time. It's only going to take you 13 or 14 turns every single time. Yeah. So that is like the tried and true method. However, we see Yohan here go for something a little bit different. Yohan starts asking about like the combinations, like the sums and so forth about what his numbers do when they're multiplied together, the products and so on. Some really weird lines of questioning here. Although, had it not been for a miscalculation, this almost would have worked, I think. Like, he actually got the right numbers. He just fucked up the order before Sangman actually got to pull the trigger and end it. And as I briefly flagged up earlier, Sangman's number is 1928, which is a year that is significant to him. I think it was the year his dad was born. My big problem with that is I feel like when you're asked to come up with any, be it a PIN number, I bet a huge percentage, not a huge percentage, but I'm sure there are a couple of people listening right now where their PIN number is a year, and that year is almost always going to be in the 1900s. So it really, I feel like it's so obvious to pick something in the 1900s. Like, when he knows that the first, especially when Yohan's asking, what do the first two numbers, do they add up to 10? I feel like he's almost going to lock himself in on 19 as the first two numbers. Granted, he didn't, but I feel like a lot of people probably would. It's something very obvious to do, I guess is the point, that I took a minute to explain. Anyway, let's see. Yohan, in fairness, Sangman takes a bit of an early lead, and Yohan has to kind of go out on a limb on a couple of his guesses to try to narrow the gap. And he does get lucky a couple of times here. But Yohan, at the end of the day, is not able to pull this out. And it was because of some mix-up he had in his notes early. And he attempts to actually give an answer that is very close, as I mentioned, but it is not correct. Sangman knows it's down to two combinations. He uses his double turn, and we are tied 1-1. Anything else on the passcode game? I know there's not obviously a whole lot to it.
Yeah, not a very inspired choice for a game, both in general and certainly for the finals.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what's the big dramatic moment going to be? Like, them staring each other down? What number is he going to guess?
Yeah, it's like, will he go for the odd number or the even number? Like, it doesn't, it's not conducive to any drama, really.
Yeah. And speaking of not really conducive, I guess it is kind of conducive to drama, but it is not conducive to skill. We are playing Quattro now to decide the winner, and this is, as you said earlier, we are essentially flipping a coin to decide the winner.
Yeah, and this is the big stain on the season, I think. If you want to talk about poor choice of games, this is maybe the worst choice of game, and certainly at the worst time, that they've had across all three seasons.
Yeah, you know, we saw Huijong fall victim to this game. During episode one, the rules are slightly different here, but where the zero is now potentially beneficial, since you can, if you don't get a Quattro at the end, there's an item where you can grab the zero and it's worth any color you want.
Yeah, although when they did it in the first episode, that was essentially a glorified winning streak game or some kind of way to vote one of the deathmatch people out. Whereas this time, it's just, you know, you're playing Quattro, and then you are essentially flipping a coin to see who wins.
Right. The first time they had to trade with all 11 people. This time they're each just going to trade with 3 people, and those are the 4 cards they have. So it really comes down to what cards people randomly draw.
Yeah, and there's no, like, interaction there either. So there's no chance to persuade the people who are exchanging cards with you or anything like that. It's just a straight-up gamble.
Right, I'm going to trade with 3 people I feel really comfortable about, and hopefully they drew some cards, some high numbers that are not the same color, and if not, what can I do? Absolutely nothing. And that's probably what Yohan was thinking to himself after he lost this game, and Dom, Sangman is your winner of Season 2. Yeah, this is preposterous. Like, this run over the course of the season, I mean, is absolutely insane. As I said, this is Sangmin's sanity from from episode 5 forward. Yeah. So I guess let's get right into it. What is your take now? Sangmin has closed it off. He's won a season of the genius. Thoughts on his place in reality history?
Yeah, if he isn't one of the best characters or the best winners that we've had across all the, you know, all of the reality TV that we've seen, he's certainly in that conversation. And he is just, he's a fantastic entertainer, he's a consummate professional, and he is a fantastic player of the genius and just an absolute home run in terms of casting choices.
Yeah, I think for me, the two that have always stood out before I watched the genius were Will and Dan from Big Brother. I think Sangmin is easily in that conversation as far as just skill for the games and completely brings it on an entertainment level. Obviously, he's got some weaknesses one-on-one. I would also probably at this point add Tony into that list as far as really just going to bring it every single episode he's in, and he's so much fun to watch. While I have a hard time saying with certainty that Sangmin is my favorite player of all time in the history of reality, I think it's well within the realm of possibility that a decade from now, when I look back on all of it, the person I have the fondest, or however many decades from now, let's be optimistic, the person I look back upon with the fondest memories may very well be Lee Sangmin.
Yeah, and we have the friend that we mentioned in the earlier parts who is currently watching season two and is this massive Sangmin fanboy, and I'm sure when he sees Sangmin being crowned champion, he's going to be absolutely just overjoyed. It's going to be fun to watch his reaction in real time.
As will all of us be. Or as were all of us, I should say. I guess we can put it in past tense because we've already done it twice. So I want to just add, just like to stay on Sangmin just in general for a little bit. I think now with this being like the cap to the closing to season two, it is unbelievable and just beyond perfect that the Garnet Heist twist in the season one, episode one, at the very end, where it's Sangmin duping exactly Jin-ho, with those two going on to be clearly the two biggest stars of the show for the next two seasons, I think that is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and you can't script it any better than that, really.
Yeah, you really can't. So, I don't know. I think certainly really, really excited to see Sangmin back for season four. And with that in mind, how do you think he's going to do on season four? Because I know we talked about it entering season two. He's got to be this huge target because he kept betraying everyone and he's clearly super talented. I feel like that's got to still be the case. But we saw that not really hinder him for too long in season two.
Well, I think going into season four, people will have watched season two and know exactly how he plays, and they'll be smart enough in their own right to be able to anticipate it and counteract it however that's appropriate.
Well, I would say, yeah, that's going to be the big difference that I'm going to be really curious to see, because seasons one and two is certainly compared to what I'm anticipating out of season four. His competition level, particularly in season two, is nothing compared to what he's going to face in season four.
Right, and it was decent in season two, I thought. Like, there were definitely good players there and people who were trying to take him down, but in season four, there are very few duds, I would say. Like, everyone is going to bring their A game and really be aware of what's going on and willing to challenge him if they see fit.
I agree. It's certainly not like pathetic. It's not like Redemption Island status or whatever, where it's like set up for him to just train wreck people. But I would say, at least out of the first, you know, and presumably out of season four, but certainly out of the first three seasons for me, season two had easily the weakest cast, as far, not weakest as far as entertainment, but weakest gameplay cast. Like, he did not have he had the easiest competition by a mile.
I think I can go along with that, yeah.
Okay.
So, thinking more about Sangmin on season four, we've said that people will be wise at his tricks and kind of know what he's going to bring to the table. Do you think he can switch things up and change his style of play to accommodate that, though?
There is an hilarious promo for season four right now that's focused on Sangmin. Don't watch it if you haven't seen season three. But from what I can tell, he's going in there essentially playing the Jung-hyun role, where he's just acting like an old man the whole time. And I think he's really... like, I think Sangmin, not to get into too many specifics, I think Sangmin's going to do himself a lot of favors in finding people to hide behind and just being really low-key. I think if we look back at the early episodes in season one, he really was, for the he was the snake in the first episode, and he could just basically hang out. And then in episode two, he wasn't really active either. I think he's really going to probably just try to lay low for a little while. And I think that's the smart idea if you're Sangmin. Just pick up a win if you can't. Hope it can. I really don't think people are going to pick him. Although maybe they will if they're doing the same math we are, that he's bad at one-on-one and they want to get him out before he can go on another run.
Right. Like, if you have someone who is fantastic in main matches and poor in death matches, you may as well take them to the death match so that if you do survive, your competition in main matches is that much weaker.
And right.
I think Sangmin has proven that he is... I wouldn't say actively bad at 1v1, but certainly worse than a lot of his competition in season 4.
Well, it doesn't allow... 1v1 typically doesn't allow him to use any of his great abilities, apart from potentially his intuition. But it doesn't give him the social... rarely is he going to be able to exercise that.
Right, yeah.
Like, there are going to be games that he's going to have in the bag, like Winning Streak game, probably. Like, the games that are popular vote, he's probably going to do really well at. But other than that, he can't really influence it.
And especially given the information that we know about how the death matches in Season 4 are being selected, there are only one or two on the list that involve other people being able to participate. And even those you can veto beforehand. So you can effectively guarantee that it's going to be you matching your wits against whoever you pick as your opponent. And so, like, knowing that, you don't have to be scared that, let's say, Sangmin is in the majority alliance and they're going to help him out if that comes to pass, because you know it's just going to be individual.
Right. You can take Quattro out of the mix or whatever. You can take betting Rock, Paper, Scissors, which is a game that we'll get to in Season 3, out of the mix. And you can be pretty confident that it's just going to be essentially a skill game.
Yeah, so it's going to be impossible for him to fly under the radar, but insofar as he can stay out of the spotlight for the time being, I think he can, you know, make a decently deep run. Like, I think even if our logic about people maybe being correct to pick Sangmin is sound, I don't know if people will want to pull the trigger on that. Maybe there is a temptation to try and take down a winner or something like that, but, you know, Sangmin is not someone who is going to invite that kind of vendetta, I don't think. You know, despite some of the stuff that he pulls with, you know, Doohee and other people, like, he's someone who I think people understand is not mean-spirited and is just doing it in the spirit of the game.
I do agree with that. And how much do you think his reputation, I think it's fair to say, at least as far as the genius producers would want people to believe, Sangmin is the clear greatest genius player of all time. How do you think that's going to impact him? Not just his reputation as a schemer, but the idea of taking down the guy who's like the consensus goat.
Well, as we say, I think Jinho actually holds that title because he is the Richard Hatchtrigger. Like, he is the one who started it all and is seen as like the iconic genius player. And so even if Sangmin is better, and I do think he is, you know, Jinho is still the one who is held in higher esteem.
Okay, interesting. Well, I remember when they were doing the, as the final card was getting flipped in Quattro, I want to say it was, they were doing this, like, montage of both Sangmin and Yeon, their runs over the course of the season, and part of the part of the text on the screen for Sangmin was, the genius is greatest player ever.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for them to say that in that context, given that Sangmin is about to play the finals, but if you ask them, you know, now or when these promotional considerations aren't in play, I think they would say, you know, I think they would be pushing the line that Jinho is still the better player. I guess the one final thought, and I guess the one concern that I would have is, I don't know if the other Season 2 people that end up on Season 4 are going to want to work with Sangmin. Firstly, because they've seen what he can do firsthand and they've all fallen victim to him before, but also, they all seem to be closer to each other than they are to him.
Yeah, if you think about it, we have Jinho, I guess, counts as a Season 2 person too, Yeon, Lawyer Yoon-sun, and Jung-hyun. I think you could absolutely be onto something. I don't know if he has any kind of, like, built-in allies.
Yeah, I think Jung-hyun might want to work with him again, but how much does that even count for, really?
It's weird to hear you say that, Dom. You're finally, yeah.
Yeah, there's this one fantastic moment when Sangmin is declared the winner where Jung-hyun walks up and tries to throw confetti over him and misses, which I'm not quite sure how that's even possible, but somehow he manages it.
Anyway. I never noticed that. That's amazing. Yeah. So just, I guess, wrapping up on Sangmin, and then we'll wrap up on Yeon in Season 2 in general. What parting thoughts do we have for Sangmin? Obviously super excited to see him for Season 4. I hope he's in there for a long time, because I am certain that it would be a total blast to get to podcast more about Sangmin all summer.
Yeah, the fundamental downside of any stacked All-Star season like this is we are going to be losing people that we like early, and there are going to be some people who do have a disappointing Season 4. I desperately hope that Sangmin isn't one of them, but I also hope that for, you know, 9 out of the however many people there are on the cast, so, you know, whoever it ends up happening to, it's going to be frustrating, but, you know, Sangmin certainly has a skill to avoid that, and I think he's going to make a good run at it.
Well, sure. I think the upside to such a deep All-Star cast is that instead of a normal All-Star season where one of the better players just winds up at the final six with 5 of the worst players, we are guaranteed to have a lot of really, I'm guessing we're going to have a lot of really talented people making it deep. Yeah, especially with the new deathmatch caveat where it looks like it's going to be mostly just straight up battles of wits. Before we close on Season 2, we should offer some parting thoughts on Yeon. He's going to be back on Season 4 as well. After talking through all this, Dom, I am very tempted, and this is just super recency bias, I am really tempted to pick him to be my Season 4 winner pick after he's won 0 main matches in his career.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to, and I really hope it happens, I really hope Yeon wins the main match. That might be one of his goals entering the season, to like actually win something.
He literally said his goal for the season was to win a main match.
It's like, okay, my work is done here. I can go home now. I'm happy.
It will be like a huge, probably like monkey off his back, right? To actually get a main match win in there.
Yeah, it's like James Ryan in BB7 when he got his nomination key for the first time. Yeah. He was like so overjoyed about it, even though for everyone else it was just so routine.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm certainly very much looking forward to Yoan here coming up on season 4. How do you think he's going to do? Because I really feel like Yoan is the perfect case study in, this guy won 0 main matches, but guess what? In the Genius, that doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, and as I said on a previous segment, you look at Sangmin's just complete, like, farcical domination of the season. It's like, it's so absurdly ridiculous.
It's bad fan fiction.
Right, if you scripted that, nobody would believe it. And then you contrast it with Yoan just never, ever winning anything. And despite all of that, Yoan going into the endgame was more likely than Sangmin to take home the title, even going into the finals. And I think that position is going to be replicated a disturbingly high percentage of the time. Like, short of Yoan botching a game for his team so badly that someone just sends him to the deathmatch as revenge, then he's going to be in there for the long haul, because who wants to... Yeah, who wants to go up against him in 1v1, and he's not doing anything in the main matches to give you an incentive to take him down yourself?
Right. I think he was immune because Sangmin gave him the token of immortality at Final Four. He went to the one death match against Yoon Sun early on, and then played against Jung Hyun later on. So over 11 rounds, he was vulnerable and not picked 8 times.
Right, and you can say that's because he did something well to avoid that, or you can say there were always bigger fish to fry, but regardless, he was still there, and that's all that counts in terms of getting to a position where his 1v1 prowess can take over and convert into a win.
Right, and I'm sure plenty of people who have listened to us for a while are saying, well, hey, isn't that super results-oriented? You're saying, because it worked out, that makes it okay. But what we're saying is, it's not that way, because this is repeatable. Like, this is a viable means to winning, even if you don't win any main matches. Like, if you are a player in one-on-one games of Yoan's caliber, this is absolutely a path to victory.
Right, and I guess the other natural criticism would be, well, you say all the time about people on Survivor that, well, they got far in the game, but that doesn't really count for anything. So why are you saying that about Yoan? And the difference there is, for a game like Survivor, You can go deep in the game because you're being dragged along as a goat without having any real chance to win. Whereas Yoan here, the reason that he's able to go deep is the same reason that equips him very well to actually win if he does get to the end. And
right.
So, yeah, whatever you want to say about the other people in the season forecast, especially being better players than him overall, I think he actually has a pretty decent slice of the win equity there.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, we cannot ever overlook that, hey, when your side loses every single main match, you're never going to go to the death match. He's solved the Genius. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
And we say that partly in jest, but it's also true. Like, it's because we talk all the time about how there are two separate games. There's the game for the week that you're trying to win, and there's a larger game of the Genius, in which maybe losing the individual game for the week is the best way to survive until the next stage.
Right, yeah. And also, if you think about it, the one time before Final 3 where he went by default, the only other time that he actually got picked for the deathmatch was by the one person he was working with, and it didn't work out. So, like, typically that person would never be picking him.
Yeah, and I think that's the one scenario where he could end up in the deathmatch early, barring some, like, Jinho versus Yoan thing that gets set up. Like, if he does really mess it up or doesn't commit to someone properly and they take offense to that, then maybe he gets sent there just, you know, out of spite. But, yeah, outside of that, I fail to see how he goes early, and I fail to see how he doesn't have a good shot going into the endgame.
Yeah, so, hey, Dom, what I'm hearing is, congratulations, Colin, fantastic winner pick.
Of course, yeah. And having said that, now that the first few episodes have already filmed, it's likely that Yoan is, like, stewing at home, having been eliminated second, and this is all going to seem ridiculous in a few weeks' time, but hopefully that doesn't happen.
Getting screamed at by Gayeon Nuna?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little Season 2 in general. I would say Season 2 is probably the bottom of my list. I think Seasons 1 and 3 I enjoyed more. You said a while ago that Season 2 might be your favorite season.
Yeah, I do, and I think there are a few reasons for that. Firstly, and this might sound silly, but I think the set just looks the best on season 2. Like, it's a lot more, it's a lot brighter and more vibrant, and it's just a lot more pleasant to look at. I also think the game selection is, you know, you have the Food Chain game, which is fantastic. Seat Exchange, which is an all-time classic too. The King game is not great, but it provided for some fun moments. And the Blackout game, despite being terrible, still was able to give them fodder for a good episode. Seven Commandments was decent. Monopoly game is fine. God's Judgment is, whatever. Miner's Auction is great. Layoff is great if you understand it. The Big Deal game is fantastic. Elevator game is good. And then the death matches in the finals were bad. But that aside, I think the game selection was pretty good. And just the cast, I think, was fantastic. I mean, you know, season 1 has a great cast, and season 3 also has a good cast. But in each of those casts, you do have a few people who fade into the background or who don't really get their chance to shine. I would say that everyone in this cast really contributed their own thing and left a lasting impression on the show. So Hui Zhong, obviously.
Minus Jake Young.
yeah, Jake Young may be the one exception there, but Dae was good. Young Kyul was like the icon of betrayal in the first few episodes. Lawyer Yunsen we're going to be seeing again in season 4. Doohee was at the center of maybe one of the best episodes of reality TV, full stop. Jin-ho obviously is a real draw to the franchise. Hong-shul is amazing. Yu-young didn't bring much in terms of comedy, but is a heavily underrated player, I would argue. Ji-won is just Ji-won, I don't know. Jun-kyun is the best person to ever grace planet Earth. And then Yo-wan, as we said before, he's just such a unique person in terms of like being the all-time best at this thing and yet seeming so contrary to that. And just the way in which he carries himself is constantly hilarious. He's one of those people who, without even trying, just makes you laugh just looking at him and seeing how he acts. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. And then Sangmin's performance speaks for itself, I think. So, yeah. You know, this entire cast is A+, I would say.
Yeah, hey, Yo-wan, I can't look at you without cracking up. No offense, though. I'm totally on board. Like, I did really, really like this cast. Once again, I cannot advocate enough for people to rewatch The Genius. It really is a much more like thorough experience the second time around. Even when you know most of the big reveals, probably, it's still so good. I'm totally with you. This cast was great. Seat Exchange, I really, really enjoyed. Minus Auction might honestly be my favorite game they've ever played. A lot of really good stuff here. The Elevator game I really enjoyed. The Big Deal game. While we talked about it, it's really hard to run with more than 4 people with outside pairs. The game itself is really, really interesting. And I think without the Token of Immortality playing such a major role there, that probably would have been one of the better games of the season as well. So certainly, I mean, all 3 seasons of The Genius. When I say season 2 is my least favorite, it's still easily in my top probably 5 seasons of reality ever.
Yeah, we're talking about like a 9.2 out of 10 as opposed to a 9.5 there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I think the question with Sangmin's win is, do you prefer to see one person just dominate the entire field, or do you want to see something more competitive? And typically we come down on the side of wanting to see more competition because, you know, Kim just bewitching a bunch of zombies and trampling over them is impressive, and you can admire the way she does it, but it doesn't make for great TV a lot of the time. Even if you enjoy watching like highly competent people do their thing. Whereas Sangmin displayed an awful lot of skill for the game, but he also had good competition. Like, everyone was talking about ways to take him down and, you know, thinking about ways to make him burn the token and how they could compete against him. And even though they were never able to act on that because he just kept winning all the time, you know, the fact that they were willing to do that already sets them apart from a lot of the dominant players in the reality TV canon.
Yeah, I think if I could just, like, revise history or whatever and ensure that had he not gotten a couple of those draws, like the Seven Commandments obviously comes to mind and Director Lee comes to mind, if I could have, like, some kind of assurance that he would not be eliminated that episode, I would definitely have wanted to see other people getting in the mix and winning some of these other games. Because just on paper, it almost, like, it doesn't, like, look or feel good when, at least to me, I would love to see more competitive stuff. When someone wins 9 out of 11 of the main matches and then also wins the final. But that being said, like you flagged up, it feels a lot better when every single week, up until the point where Yo-wan started just propelling him to victory, he was facing opposition. People were trying to get the token away from him, and he was just playing really, really superb games of the genius. So with that in mind, like, I'm happy to watch Sangmin week after week crush games. So, Dom, season 3 is what we have not done yet. It's looking like, just because of the timing now, we're going to put out season 3 after we do season 4, episode 1. But before we do that, because we now have tomorrow free, we were going to do some season 3, we're going to do a season 4 preview podcast, which hopefully will be up before season 4 actually airs. It'll probably be very close, and most of you probably won't hear it until after you've watched season 4, episode 1. But we do want to get those thoughts down before the actual season starts.
Yeah, and for the growing mass of us who have been, I guess live-tweeting is the wrong word, but giving our thoughts about The Genius as we've been watching it, there's always been this difficulty of, well, we want to get other people into it by talking about The Genius, but we don't want to spoil things for them when they eventually end up watching. The solution that we devised, and it's not a complete one, but it's the best we could find for now, is we've created a Twitter account, @GeniusTakes. So if you follow that and then tweet at it with your thoughts on season 4 if you're caught up, then only other people who are also following that Twitter account will be able to see those tweets and be able to join the conversation there.
Right. I mean, people could see it if they click the tweets and replies button, but no one fucking does that.
Yeah, and also if you reply to one of those tweets, then you'll also see it on that other person's feed. But, I don't think there's going to be a better solution than that, or at least not one that we can think
of. Try to be cognizant of that, to include @GeniusTakes first, whenever you're talking about The Genius. So we will see you guys back here with Season 4 and Season 3 all summer long. Hopefully some more just general stuff. We have plenty of awesome guests that I know we've wanted to talk to for a long time, and I'm sure have been wanting to talk a lot about The Genius for a long time. So, Dom, anything else to get to before we get out of here?
No, except to say that season 4 premieres in less than 24 hours now, and it is going to be absolutely fantastic. So if you are not caught up, do your best to catch up as soon as possible, and I hope you can join us in that conversation.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for listening. We will see you very soon. Take care, everybody. We'll be right back.